Listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. A collective bargaining battle in Missouri has escalated, with the state now appealing a judge's order upholding state employee unions' right to collect fair share fees from workers who benefit from contracts but are not actually members of the unions. The outgoing Democratic Governor Bob Holden issued an executive order allowing those collections, but Republican Secretary of State and now Governor-elect Matt Blunt is against it, and he refused to implement the order. A judge ruled against him and for the unions, but now Blunt says that he will rescind Governor Holden's order as soon as he takes power as governor in January. The state of Missouri is appealing this pro-union decision and wants the order put on hold while the appeal process unfolds. Missouri Governor Bob Holden in 2001 issued an executive order granting collective bargaining rights to thousands of state workers in Missouri. He also granted state employee unions the right to collect those fair share fees. This is one of the first post-election skirmishes between labor and Republicans.
Thousands of current or former federal employees in the National Guard are eligible for annual leave adjustments or other compensation. The American Federation of Government Employees won a major Court of Appeals case last year that forces a reversal of a policy implemented by the Office of Personnel Management. Under federal law, federal employees who are also reservists are allowed 15 days of military leave each year. However, because of a misinterpretation of the law by the OPM, employees were also charged for weekends and other scheduled days off. The AFGE is working to assist the OPM in reimbursing employees who were incorrectly charged. Joe Goldberg is the AFGE Assistant General Counsel.
The American Federation of Government Employees, which has offered its services to OPM to design an efficient and speedy pay process for National Guard reservists who are also federal employees.
This Veterans Day, past and present members of the U.S. Armed Forces are facing many challenges, the most apparent of which is the danger of fighting in Iraq, where 1,100 men and women have lost their lives. Another 4,000 suffered an injury serious enough to retire. Due to persistent underfunding of the VA hospital system, many sick or disabled veterans now have to wait for months to receive care. The Army has even tried to refuse benefits, claiming illnesses are due to pre-existing conditions.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. How much of the bill for the war in Iraq is your state paying for? Missouri, for example, is paying $2.7 billion for the war. In comparison, that state has only received $116 million for Homeland Security and only $349 million in federal funding for the No Child Left Behind Act. That's according to a new interactive map created by the Center for American Progress. Available at their website, www.americanprogress.org, the map even breaks down state-by-state spending on the war by major cities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at AMIBA.net.
Like an outer space alien from a 1950s science fiction movie, the H-1B monster is back. H-1B is an immigration classification that has allowed high-tech corporations to import hundreds of thousands of low-paid computer engineers, programmers, and other skilled professionals from abroad, rather than paying the middle-class salaries earned by high-tech workers in America. These visas have been a primary tool used by CEOs to bust the salary levels of high-tech jobs, the very jobs that we were told were to be the source of upward mobility and middle-class opportunity for our citizens. At the height of the high-tech boom, greed-headed corporate executives wailed that they simply could not find enough Americans with the computer skills they needed. So it was imperative, they said, that they be allowed to bring in tech workers from India, Russia, and elsewhere to fill the gap. This was pure horse hockey. Far from a shortage of qualified U.S. workers, people with top-notch skills were practically begging for jobs and being rejected. The industry executives were creating a false crisis for one reason. They wanted to displace well-paid Americans with foreign workers who would take a third or less in pay. But horse hockey prevailed. With their campaign contributions and lobbying clout, they got Congress to triple the number of H-1B visas issued each year, and many Americans soon found themselves training their foreign replacements. Then came the high-tech bust, and hordes of workers of all nationalities were dumped by the CEOs. The H-1B visa levels were no longer an issue and were quietly dropped. But now that the tech economy is picking up again, instead of hiring Americans, the CEOs are wailing the same old tune about shortages, demanding that Congress give them more H-1B visas to import cheap workers to fill the new jobs. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help stop these greed heads, call Wash Tech, 206-528-6264.
I'm just a cowboy who's got achy knees, and the joint pain they call osteoarthritis. I tried over-the-counter pills, they weren't right for me. So I tried some prescriptions, and they made me foggy. And that's when I found you, Celebrex, for joint pain relief, no more, no less.
Celebrex targets the source of pain and inflammation. It's non-narcotic. It doesn't make you foggy or slow you down. Ask your doctor about Celebrex celecoxib capsules. Celebrex should not be taken if you've had aspirin-sensitive asthma or allergic reaction due to aspirin or other arthritis medicines or certain drugs called sulfonamides. In rare cases, serious stomach problems such as bleeding can occur without warning. Tell your doctor if you have kidney or liver problems. To learn more, call 1-888-CELEBREX, visit Celebrex.com, or see our ad in Real Simple. Just one prescription Celebrex gives 24-hour relief.
Ask your doctor about Celebrex. Joint pain relief, no more, no less.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Hello, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Today, 11-11. Dual significance for me. It's Veterans Day, of course, the day that we honor not just, like on Memorial Day, those veterans who died in service, but on Veterans Day we honor all veterans, that being today, 11-11. Also, just, you know, on a personal note, 23 years ago today, at 11-11 a.m. on 11-11, Louise and I got married. So we've been, did I say 23? 33 years ago. So our 31-year-old daughter would be surprised to learn it was 23 years. Anyhow, a wonderful 33 years. Thank you, Louise. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Here we are. Welcome back to the program. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, the website, tomhartman.com, if you'd like to drop in. The chat room is already well populated. I see our visitor from Norway, who was in there yesterday and much of this week, hasn't shown up yet, but perhaps he will. However, at the moment, we have on the line Congressman John Conyers of Michigan. Congressman Conyers?
Tom Hartman, happy Veterans Day.
Well, thank you. Happy Veterans Day to you, too, Congressman. I'm so glad to have you on. I shared part of your letter yesterday with my listeners, and this whole issue of the possible. It's not even, you know, was the election stolen or not, or should it have been a different outcome? It's really, isn't it really about... We shouldn't have to say, was the election fair or not, or free or transparent? It should be just obvious that it was transparent. Isn't that the case?
You've got the right picture, Tom. This is just about doing what good people do in a democracy, is make the election process better, more efficient, fewer lines, less questions, more confidence about the process.
Yeah. Yeah. Now
that's the key, isn't it?
I would think so. And Congressman John Conyers, a couple of questions. The first is, I'm sure you're familiar with Congressman Rush Holt's bill to require a paper trail and auditable, and random audits and whatnot of these voting machines.
Yes.
Why have the Republicans been so aggressive in trying to prevent this bill from coming forward for a vote in the House of Representatives and the parallel bill in the Senate?
Well, it's the easy thing would be to say because they don't like the bill and they don't want it. But I think that it may be deeper than this. And by the way, I want to commend Rush Holt as a congressman and as a science man. He's been a big help to everybody in the Congress, regardless of what side of the aisle one might be on.
Yeah, he's a brilliant guy. He's got a PhD in physics for our listeners who don't know.
He's a helper. And he's on the letter, by the way. I had so many members when they started hearing people calling us back, Tom, thanking us for somebody thinking that there is something that you should do after Election Day besides celebrate or hold your head in horror. We've got to continue to make the election process as comfortable and as have as much confidence in it everywhere. Now, here's the problem, Tom. Our Constitution gives the operation of the process of the election to the states. So the feds have to be very careful and circumspect about how we come into it, or we will be encroaching upon states' rights.
Yeah, I understand.
But we do have the power, because these are federal elections, to make sure that the process is clear. And that's what we thought we were doing when we just voted out last year the Help America Vote Act, which was to clean up the problems, of which there were too many to enumerate here, that happened in Florida and elsewhere. Now we find out that there are still glitches. There are still states that don't want to have a copy of how a person voted so that we can verify and affirm that what they thought they did was what happened. And, by the way, we know that there are enough little wonks in the computer world that they can infiltrate computer machinery.
If they can hack the CIA's computer, and they have,
I think so.
Then they can hack a voting machine. I mean,
we have to be careful, and we have to act like that we know that we're in the real world, and you don't have to be a political enemy to do this. People just go in to create mischief and everything else.
Sure.
Now, look. Face it, this election was won by one state again.
Yeah.
This time the state was Ohio.
Yeah.
Debo operates out of Ohio. This is a fellow that saluted the flag and said it's going to be Bush.
Yeah, Wally O'Dell.
And I'll get the contract for the machines, and he did.
Yeah.
Now, we don't want to get paranoid. But we don't want to act like we are so naive that we can't figure out that some of these things have to be investigated. Now, the criminals will be, anybody with criminal intent to defraud in an election, that's against the law.
Yeah, and will be prosecuted.
But when you get long lines, nobody may have... It may be that we have processes that need to be improved, and that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
The voting machines and the incidents need to be collected, which we're doing, turn over to the General Accountability Office, GAO, and have them begin to do the examination that's required.
Right. Congressman Conyers, I want to talk with you about the Gonzalez thing, but one last question about this. If about the voting machines, if you don't mind, if we acknowledge that when government was established in the United States back some 230-odd years ago, the core idea was that for the first time, instead of a kingdom, instead of a king or a queen or a pope or the feudal lords owning the government and thus then granting privileges to we the people would have the rights, and we would own our own government, and we would administer the commons. So the commons of the national parks, the commons of our road system, the commons of our air traffic system, the commons of our water, the safety of our food, our schools, our public education, our police departments, our fire departments. All these commons are administered or owned by the government, by we the people through our government. And the way that we the people tell our government this is how we want the commons administered is through our vote. And so it seems that the vote is the most important of all the commons. And the question in my mind that I think is the largest question that has to be asked is, why have we privatized the vote? Why? I mean, it seems like a small sin against democracy to privatize the concession stand at Yellowstone National Park. But why would we allow private for-profit corporations who claim that they don't have to be accountable to us because of trade secrecy laws to handle the vote and tell us how we voted when this is how we administer everything else?
Well, that's exactly what should not be happening, and occasionally it is because of the differences in controls and rules and regulations state from state. Now, what you said really needs to be enshrined. Democracy is based on the vote of people choosing who govern. But the vote has to be sacred, it has to be preserved, it has to be free, and people have to believe that their vote counts and will be counted.
Yes, and otherwise all these young people who came out this time are not going to show up in 4 years. They're going to say, it's fixed.
Yep, we're trying to head off some of the conspiracy theories, but the people that have called into us and the reports from the Associated Press and many other responsible media have told us about the fact that voting machines in Ohio failed to register votes for the president in 92,000 cases.
Yeah.
In Columbus, Ohio, electronic voting systems gave President Bush nearly 4,000 extra votes. In Franklin County, unofficial results reported Bush way over the hill in an impossible number.
Yeah.
And things like these happen, and our job is to follow along with the accounting office to make sure that if we have to modify the laws or change the laws based on our experience in the 2004 election, that we're able to do it. And people have been flooding my offices with calls saying, thanks, I'm glad you guys and Rush Holt and Jerry Nadler and my friend from Florida,
mm-hmm.
Who's working with us on this, all of you guys are doing such a great job. Oh, Jerry Wexler in
yep.
Florida, who's in his own district. He was reporting from what was happening there. And this is the way we proceed. And
yeah.
and we're getting a good response. The GAO is totally independent, and they follow these leads. And so I'm just urging everybody on this international program of yours to call in and let us know, and we'll follow them down.
Contact
some
your elected officials.
Some of them will wash out. Some of them will be explainable, and others... We'll need to get the U.S. attorney in, and others need some changes in our present voting laws.
There you go. And I'm more extreme than Rush Holt on this. I think that corporations should be barred from having any role at all in our voting. He thinks that, you know, they should be held accountable. I just think that this is something that government should be doing. Civil servants
should,
who are accountable
should,
to we the people.
We should do the machines, too.
That's yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. The machines should be owned and should be programmed by government employees. The software should be open source software that everyone can examine, and there should not be corporations involved in the process at all, in my opinion. But the number to call Congress, by the way, for our listeners is 202-224-3121 for the to the switchboard. Congressman Conyers, we're talking with Congressman John Conyers of Michigan, ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee. We have a little less than a minute left in this segment, then we have to take about a four-minute break, and then we'll have another 5 minutes. If you can stay until the bottom of the hour, can you? Or do you have to go?
Could you give me a rain check on the
sure.
bottom of the hour?
Okay. Part? Yeah, I'm sorry.
I appreciate it.
Then we're
Day. I've got all my veterans groups that
okay.
I'm trying to.
Then we're pretty much out of time here. We've got maybe 20 seconds left. A final thought on Alberto Gonzalez. I'll give it to you.
Well, if you had asked me if I would take anybody but John Ashcroft, I would have said yes, except when you put up Alberto Gonzalez.
Oh, my. Okay.
I mean, here's a fellow.
Well, Congressman, I'm sorry. We have hard breaks. And I don't have any control over the breaks.
As they say in the movies, you get my drift.
Yeah, I get your drift. And I appreciate it. And I've got a whole bunch of information about Gonzalez here that I will be sharing with our listeners as soon as we come back from this break. Congressman, thank you so much for being with us. Congressman Conyers.
Happy Veterans Day.
Thank you, and to you, too.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
When I said I'd leave no child behind, I guess I changed my mind.
Oh, he changed his mind.
Luckily, I bribed you with my tax cut con. The rich got richer, soon the surplus was gone. Prosperity replaced by unemployment and debt. Who could ask for more?
Yes, indeed. The billionaires for Bush are so happy.
For me to still please you in 2004.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. HelpAmericaRecount.org is a new organization at 527 that Bev Harris of BlackBoxVoting.com and the, oh, what's the name of the initiative? I've got it here someplace. I'll have it for you in a second. Anyhow, there's a clean voting initiative that they put this thing together. Here it is. The National Ballot Integrity Project. They put this thing together, and they're raising money for recounts in Florida and Ohio. So just so you know about it, helpamericarecount.org. And it's pretty clean. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Sheila in Washington State. Hey, Sheila, I'm sorry I couldn't get you on before when Congressman Conyers was on. It just time got away from us.
Oh, that's quite all right. There's a lot of activity going on. And I understand it. I lived in Canada for 4 years,
mm-hmm.
and they hold their federal elections separate from their provincial elections.
That's interesting.
And
separate date, you mean?
What they do is always paper ballots. I mean, it's like they don't care how long it takes to count the votes.
Oh, it's the same way in most, as far as I know, in all the countries in Europe.
Oh,
I lived in Germany for a year.
I lived in Germany also.
Yeah.
It's that way.
We've both seen this.
Throughout the free world.
Yeah, exactly. You vote on a piece of paper, and it's not scanned by a machine. It's counted by hand by civil servants who are taking time off from their regular jobs.
I think that if this country initiated that type of voting and had the federal elections separate from the state elections, then we could also have college students to engage them in the voting process to count these votes and then give them college credit.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so much that could be done. I mean, the way it's done in Germany is civil servants, you know, people who would work in the DMV just take a week off from their regular job. Things slow down in other areas.
Precisely.
And you know, and they show up and they count the votes. Sheila, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. What's on my mind is that I've now heard from three different sources that we're losing you as of Friday.
Yeah. Chuck, I'm not going there. I'm sorry. We don't talk about programming on our individual affiliates. 123% turnout is too good to be true. This happened in Fairview Park, Ohio. In Broward County, Ohio, voting machines can do the moonwalk. They count backwards, but only on certain ballot measures. In New Hampshire, voter trends seem to depend more on which voting machine was used than on what party voters are affiliated with. When asked to produce zero reports at poll openings, some Florida touchscreen machines reported votes were already in the system. A little ballot box stuffing in Florida, apparently stuffing in Gahanna, Ohio, thousands of more votes than voters. It appears, though, that that may be provisional ballots or absentee ballots showing up. We're not really sure. Just the bottom line is there's a lot of questions. Frankly, I don't think it's going to change the outcome of the election, but we do need to clean this thing up. And as long as there's a possibility, certainly, we need to get into it. We need to figure this out. Pat in Sioux City, Iowa, on the line. Hey, Pat, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. I have called you and talked to you before about whether you thought the Bush administration had plans on putting women all in burqas and what his religious agenda was. Well, I noticed throughout his administration, they keep using the term...
Pat, I'm going to have to ask you to hold on, and we'll pick this up on the other side of the break, if that's all right with you. We have to take a break here. It'll take just a few moments, and we'll get back to that. We have an interesting letter here from Bob Jones III to George Bush, basically saying it's time to bring out the burkas. We'll visit that in just a moment. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
Tonight on NBC, an all-new Joey and heartbreak over Kelly Preston.
I'm working on an audition for tomorrow. Thought maybe I could use all this heartache and make my performance more powerful.
Oh, boy, spicy sausages, mamma mia.
And on Will and Grace, a date for Grace.
And a new start?
Let me get on the horn right now to air Fat Chance.
Then The Apprentice, the stakes rise as it comes down to 8 finalists, followed by ER and a stunning performance by Ray Liotta. All-new NBC tonight.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. A collective bargaining battle in Missouri has escalated, with the state now appealing a judge's order upholding state employee unions' right to collect fair share fees from workers who benefit from contracts but are not actually members of the unions. The outgoing Democratic governor, Bob Holden, issued an executive order allowing those collections, but Republican Secretary of State and now governor-elect Matt Blunt is against it, and he refused to implement the order. A judge ruled against him and for the unions, but now Blunt says that he will rescind Governor Holden's order as soon as he takes power as governor in January. The state of Missouri is appealing this pro-union decision and wants the order put on hold while the appeal process unfolds. Missouri Governor Bob Holden in 2001 issued an executive order granting collective bargaining rights to thousands of state workers in Missouri. He also granted state employee unions the right to collect those fair share fees. This is one of the first post-election skirmishes between labor and Republicans.
Thousands of current or former federal employees in the National Guard are eligible for annual leave adjustments or other compensation. The American Federation of Government Employees won a major Court of Appeals case last year that forces a reversal of a policy implemented by the Office of Personnel Management. Under federal law, federal employees who are also reservists are allowed 15 days of military leave each year. However, because of a misinterpretation of the law by the OPM, employees were also charged for weekends and other scheduled days off. The AFGE is working to assist the OPM in reimbursing employees who were incorrectly charged. Joe Goldberg is the AFGE Assistant General Counsel.
The American Federation of Government Employees, which has offered its services to OPM to design an efficient and speedy pay process for National Guard reservists who are also federal employees.
This Veterans Day, past and present members of the U.S. Armed Forces are facing many challenges, the most apparent of which is the danger of fighting in Iraq, where 1,100 men and women have lost their lives. Another 4,000 suffered an injury serious enough to retire. Due to persistent underfunding of the VA hospital system, many sick or disabled veterans now have to wait for months to receive care. The Army has even tried to refuse benefits, claiming illnesses are due to pre-existing conditions.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. How much of the bill for the war in Iraq is your state paying for? Missouri, for example, is paying $2.7 billion for the war. In comparison, that state has only received $116 million for Homeland Security and only $349 million in federal funding for the No Child Left Behind Act. That's according to a new interactive map created by the Center for American Progress. Available at their website, www.americanprogress.org, the map even breaks down state-by-state spending on the war by major cities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, video joints on every corner, 14 super discount stores.
And welcome back, 27 minutes past the before the hour. A letter from Bob Jones III at Bob Jones University, president of Bob Jones University, where George W. Bush has spoken. Old friend of George W.'s, Dr. Bob Jones III. Dear Mr. President, he signs it sincerely, your friend, Bob Jones III. In your reelection, God has graciously granted America, though she doesn't deserve it, a reprieve from the agenda of paganism. You've been given a mandate. We, the people, expect your voice to be like the clear and certain sound of a trumpet. Because you seek the Lord daily, we who know the Lord will follow that kind of voice regularly. Don't equivocate. Put your agenda on the front burner and let it boil. You owe the liberals nothing. They despise you because they despise your Christ. Can you believe that? Here's a guy who claims to be a Christian. And, you know, this is just the height of bigotry. I am a liberal, I am a Christian, and for this man to say that I despise Jesus Christ is, you know, Jesus wouldn't tolerate this, in my opinion. Anyhow, Pat, we were talking about bringing back the burqa. Here it is, Bob Jones III. He says, undoubtedly you will have the opportunity to appoint many conservative judges and exercise forceful leadership with Congress in passing legislation that is defined by biblical norm regarding the family, sexuality, sanctity of life, religious freedom, freedom of speech, and limited government. And it goes on and on. So there you go. You got your burqa?
Well, the thing that I wanted to point out was that it seems to me that the language that the Bush administration uses is not just anti-abortion, strictly focused on that point. They seem to talk about women's rights in general.
Yeah.
It seems to me that people don't realize that if a woman gives up her single right to choose, whether a woman would choose to have an abortion or not, to me, is not the point. It's about me, myself, what I want to do with my life, and
yeah,
when I want to do with my life.
Exactly, if, Pat. Go ahead.
If you give up the right for that, then you have to give up all your rights.
Yeah, well, at least you have to give up all your rights under the Fourth Amendment. See, here's where it started, Pat, and thank you for the call. I appreciate a good point. In 1873, a woman went before a judge. Became a lawyer, walked into court one day, and the judge said, "You can't function in this courtroom. You're a woman," and he threw her out. And that case established that went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And in 1873, Sarah Bradwell was her name. The case is called Bradwell versus the State of Illinois. And in that case, the Supreme Court said that the preeminent purpose of women was to fulfill the role of wife and mother. And therefore, it was legitimately in the interests of the state to limit the rights of women under the Fourth Amendment, or under the Constitution. And that stood as law until in 1973 in Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court said, we're going to overturn Bradwell versus State. Roe v. Wade was not so much about abortion. It was about whether or not women have equal access to the Bill of Rights with men. And, you know, it's the point that just constantly gets lost in the discussion. And Pat raised it very well, and I appreciate that. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Yes, good day, Tom. I was listening to Congressman Conyers in the first half hour there, and he's a good man. He's been fighting the good fight for liberalism and progressivism for many years. And, you know, I just had a theoretical point here. I just wondered if by some miracle they could recount those votes or maybe count them all in Ohio. And let's just say, we'll conjecture here, that it goes the other way and Kerry winds up winning the state, which, of course, would give him a lead in the Electoral College. Now, legally speaking, does his concession then become a moot point? Or
yeah, well, it depends. There are layers of stuff here. Number one, a concession speech is not a legal document or any kind of contract at all. Kerry's concession speech was cosmetic and political, not legal, okay. Number one. Number two, the vote for the President of the United States has not yet happened. The vote for the President of the United States happens on December, I believe it's the 14th this year, right. when the Electoral College, the electors are actually from the various states, get on planes and go to Washington, D.C., or they used to, I'm assuming that they still do, and get together and vote. And that, when that electoral vote is held, that's when the vote for President of the United States is held. Now, here's the caveat to that. The Constitution basically says that every state can decide how they want to determine who the electors are going to be by whatever means they want.
Right.
In all 50 states, we do it by holding elections, but we don't have to. A state doesn't have to hold a presidential election. It can simply say, you know, we've just decided we're going to send electors for George Bush. That's it. We're not even going to put his name on the ballot this year, or for John Kerry, for that matter. And that's what in Florida happened when the Florida legislature, controlled by Republicans, and Jeb Bush, of course, in 2000, when the recount was being done during those 36 days, this was, you know, the head of the Speaker of the House of Florida said, even if the recount shows that Gore took Florida and thus won the presidency, we're going to send Republican electors to Washington, D.C., because Florida's constitution says that the House of Representatives has to certify the election and decide who the electors are going to be.
But I wonder if that could be challenged in the sense that, sure, the state legislature could choose either to have a popular vote or just directly appoint them. But on the other hand, if the popular vote has already taken place in the state, can they then contravene that?
You know, it's going to vary. It's going to depend on how the constitution of the individual state is written. I know the situation with Florida because it was all over the news four years ago. I don't, frankly, know the law in Ohio. I'm sorry. I don't know the answer to that.
Well, I think you agree with me, though, that we ought to get rid of this Electoral College.
Actually, no, I don't. I don't.
No.
I think that the Electoral College actually does a useful thing here. The Electoral College allows the smaller states to have a little more weight and the larger states to have a little less weight. Because the number of electors that you have is equal to the number of senators plus congressmen that you have.
Why is that important?
Well, the reason that would be important is if you did away with the Electoral College, then the entire presidential campaign could be done in about 20 cities, which constitute about a little more than half the population of the United States. And all of the rural areas of America could be completely ignored.
Well, I hate to disagree with you, Tom, but see, the way this works now, they actually do just go to certain battleground states. For instance, like Texas, California, and New York.
Now, I know, they don't even bother to campaign. I understand.
Neither candidate does because they know the other guy's going to win there.
Yeah, yeah. See, here's the solution to this, and it doesn't have to do with doing away with the Electoral College, which I actually think is a useful thing. It has to do, and also, the other objection I have to doing with the Electoral College is that it would require a constitutional convention. Or a constitutional amendment,
and
I don't think that we should, you know, be easily amending the Constitution. And I certainly don't want to see a constitutional convention because the cons will come in and they'll rewrite the thing so that we don't have a constitution anymore. But here's the thing: if every individual state was to simply deal with their electors the same way that Nebraska and Maine do, I believe it's Nebraska, maybe it's Kansas, it's one of those two Midwestern states, and Maine, where they say, okay, if 60% of our state voted for candidate A and 40% for candidate B, then 60% of our electors are going to go for candidate A and 40% for candidate B. If every state, in other words, proportionally assigned their electors based on the vote within that state, then we would solve that problem of people no longer bothering to show up in California to campaign.
But they're not actually doing that now.
Yes, they are. There's two states that do that right now.
Well, no, but they don't do that. What they do is they take the district where someone may have won. It's not an exact proportion. It's not a direct thing where winner take all. But it's also not exactly a proportional either. It's kind of halfway between those.
Yeah.
But I guess my opinion is I just have to respectfully disagree with you. And, you know, win or lose, my guy wins or my gal wins or loses. I would just like the people to have a direct say and get rid of this archaic.
You know, I think a lot of people would be much happier with it, frankly, Rick. And you know, you make a good point. I appreciate the call. Thanks for calling in and regularly, for that matter. Rick and Richard in Grand Rapids, Michigan, on the line. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. I caught you on Air America Radio. I think it was the morning before last on Unfiltered.
Yeah.
Nice job. Kudos.
Thank you. Thank you.
Here's the thing. I'm a Christian. I'm pretty offended by this Bob Jones thing. My take on the whole deal was the morning after the election, I thought to myself, it's a good thing that Jesus was resurrected. because if he had not been, he'd be spinning in his grave at 750 RPM.
Yeah.
That these people are beating us on moral values. I mean, it's a joke, and to me, that's hate speech from Bob Jones.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, some of the exit polls that were done about, you know, for people who, you know, asking people what were the moral values that you were most concerned with, the majority of people, over 40% of people in general, who said, yes, I voted as a moral, you know, the moral values are the most important thing to me. The moral issue that they were most concerned about was the morality of the war in Iraq.
Interesting.
Yeah. If you look at all voters.
Abortion would have been the number one.
No, that was just among Bush voters.
Yeah.
And somehow, for some reason, the media is only paying attention to that. But John Zogby did some excellent exit polling on that, which we'll get into a little later in the program, that breaks this stuff out. Richard, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. And the task ahead, this Todd Smith wrote this. It's just a great piece. He says, the Republican Party has targeted and galvanized the least educated, most indifferent, and prejudiced people in America because these are the easiest people to lie to. Republicans alter the context and twist the meaning of issues to create a curtain of ambiguity that allows their candidates to get away with lying while preventing Democrats from getting away with the truth. Republicans portray their agenda as smaller government, lower taxes, and family values, but what they deliver is greater wealth for the wealthy, rising poverty, perpetual war, and more pollution. They deceive good people on issues like abortion, which decreases only when poverty is reduced, and public education and health care are improved, regardless of legal status. In other words, you want to reduce abortion? You can reduce abortion, eliminate poverty, improve public education and health care. They say, the Republicans say, deficits don't matter, but reckless deficit spending that adds to the national debt is stealing from our children and puts future generations at risk. The principles of the Democratic Party, Todd writes, are peace, prosperity, and justice for all people, not just the wealthy and powerful. Mainstream news media are owned by corporations that do not tolerate serious critical investigation. So the only way for democratic principles to be fulfilled is if we, the Democrats, Todd writes, educate and inoculate people against Republican fear-mongering and disinformation. This task is going to take a lot more than a six-month election cycle. This is a full-time job. This absolutely, and you know, well said. Let's talk about Alberto Gonzalez. I just want to get this stuff on the record because now, and also the question: now that Ashcroft is no longer Attorney General, is he going to be the first nominee for the Supreme Court? How do you like that? That's the buzz that's going around right now. Whether it's a facetious buzz or a real buzz, time will tell. But anyhow, Alberto Gonzalez was George W. Bush's lawyer in Texas who vetted all of the death penalty cases. I believe there's 132 of them. 100% of the death penalty cases that came before the governor, before Bush when he was governor of Texas, he said with an average of about 20 minutes examination, he approved all of them. And Gonzalez wrote all the memos that would lead to those things. He was responsible for writing a memo on the facts of each death penalty case. Atlantic Monthly concluded, Gonzalez repeatedly failed to apprise the governor of critical issues in the cases at hand, ineffective counsel, conflict of interest, mitigating evidence, actual evidence of innocence. He never included those things in his memos to George W. Bush. He's the co-author of the infamous memo that included the opinion that laws prohibiting torture, quote, do not apply to the president's detention and interrogation of enemy combatants, end quote. Further, the memo puts forth the opinion that the pain caused by an interrogation must, quote, include injury such as death, organ failure, or serious impairment of bodily functions in order to constitute torture, end quote. Gonzalez wrote, the war against terrorism is a new kind of war. And he went on to say, this new paradigm renders obsolete Geneva's strict limitations on questioning of enemy prisoners and renders quaint some of its provisions. In other words, this is the guy who has helped make us an international outlaw, Alberto Gonzalez. This week, a federal judge ruled that, quote, President Bush has both overstepped his constitutional bounds and improperly brushed aside the Geneva Conventions, end quote, when he established military tribunals in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba to try detainees as war criminals. But it was fine with Alberto Gonzalez. You know, it looks like the Democrats are not going to have enough spine to really seriously challenge this guy. They want the Hispanic vote. but not good. Not good. 1-866-889-8894. Ed in California on the line. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I'm sorry. I got to go back to the one just before this with abortion.
Sure.
And please, why is this a woman's issue? Why is it not the man's issue? Why can't we hold the man who made the woman pregnant to the fire?
Yeah, like if she's going to if she's going to have her pregnancy to term, then he has to get neutered.
How about he just has to pay for it? I got news for you. That'll scare half of these Christians right out of their minds.
Well, let's not attack Christians. See, now you're doing the same thing that Bob Jones is doing. We can't lump all these people into one box.
Every abortion I've known of has always been a Christian.
Well, but you know, there's a lot of very rational Christians out there. There might be. We're talking about cultists.
I'm talking about the woman who I knew in 1980 who had 13 of them because the Catholic Church doesn't teach...
13 children, you mean, not 13 abortions.
No, 13 abortions.
13 abortions, though.
She was using it as a contraceptive because the Catholic Church doesn't want contraceptives either.
Oh, she was Catholic?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
13 of them, and that was in the 80s.
Oh, my goodness.
How about my nephew who came home with two of them?
Yeah.
He aborted a set of twins because they didn't want him using a prophylactic.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the thing. I mean, all of the evidence shows that when you give people appropriate education about birth control, abortions go down. But the problem is that the Catholic Church doesn't want people using birth control either. And now, under many of these mandates that were passed under the Bush administration, discussions of birth control can no longer be held in schools, can no longer be funded federally.
I went to a wedding 2 months ago at a Catholic church, and they said no less than 9 times, please have children for the church.
There you go. Yeah. And there are some folks who are even suggesting that this is, a racial issue on this whole abortion thing. Ed, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 10 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique. And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots, organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a Wind Feature Story. I'm Sarah Turner. On Friday in Santa Cruz, California, 45 people turned out for a solidarity rally in support of embattled workers at Sunshine Villa. Wind correspondent Vinny Lombardo has more.
Santa Cruz should be where?
Sunshine Villa is unfair.
Yolanda Moya has worked at Sunshine Villa for more than 3 years as a certified nursing assistant. Since February, Moya has been a key organizer in the SEIU contract drive. She says workers at Sunshine Villa are underpaid and receive too few health benefits for the heavy workload.
Many times we was short staffing.
Workers also complain of mistreatment by Sunshine Villa managers. Moya says the situation results in poor service to the residents. Recently, she discarded a table ornament that a resident had been chewing on. Moya says it was a health hazard. Managers apparently disagreed.
On October the 5th, they suspended me because I threw away a plastic vegetables in the garbage. And on October 12th, they terminated me with no reason.
Union reps believe Moya was fired for her organizing efforts. In July, workers at Sunshine Villa voted by a margin of 4-1 in favor of union representation. Joe Keffer, organizing director with the SEIU Local 415, says Sunshine Villa lawyers immediately filed 25 challenges with the regional director of the NLRB in Oakland. When these were dismissed, Sunshine Villa attorneys appealed to Washington. Last week, Keffer says the NLRB certified the union.
So now we can go in, start raising the issues, and we'll start negotiating our first contract. We expect that they're going to come in there and fight us aggressively and challenge every word that we put on the table.
Joan Bosworth, executive director of Sunshine Villa, snubbed repeated attempts for comments on this story. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Vinny Lombardo in Santa Cruz, California.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Taking care of business here on the air 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, maybe 51. I don't know. Maybe I'll take a week off one of these days. We've been doing this for 2 years and having a great, great time. And next week we're going to start something new. Tentatively, we're planning this for Tuesdays around 1:30, around the second hour of the program, 1:30 Eastern time, in the middle of the second hour of the program. We have a 17-minute segment there, and neurolinguistic programming, or NLP, is a technique. It's a collection of techniques actually that come out of the science of linguistics and hypnosis. And was first developed back in the 60s by Richard Bandler and John Grinder, two professors from the University of California. Richard Bandler was my teacher, my mentor in this, and trained me as an NLP trainer. I was trained in Atlanta by a fellow by the name of Life Roland at the Atlanta NLP Center as an NLP practitioner. Back, 26 years ago when I used to run a community for abused kids, our first psychologist was using NLP, which was when I was first introduced to it. And it is a technique for communication that back when I owned an ad agency in Atlanta 10 years ago, we used to teach to corporate clients and whatnot, communications, as a way of, how to make communications powerful, how to reach people on multiple levels so that they see what you're saying, they hear clearly your message, and they get a powerful sense of what it is that you're talking about. And so we're going to be doing every week for a while an NLP course. So we're going to break it down into a bunch of little pieces. And I'm going to try and start this coming Tuesday, although I was up till past midnight last night doing interviews with radio stations out on the West Coast. We're going to be on NPR tonight. It's been nonstop ever since I wrote this article about the vote hack. And we've got some great follow-up stuff, and I've got to get that done this weekend, too. So, but tentatively, we're planning to start this next Tuesday. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Don't miss it. It will dramatically change things in your lives, in your life, and those of people around you. We're going to be talking about how this can be applied, of course, to your personal life, because that's what most of this comes out of, but also how it can be applied to politics, political communication, changing people's minds, the art of persuasion. And this is the stuff, by the way, that Newt Gingrich understands really, really well. And that the Republicans have used very, very successfully in campaigns going back at least a decade and a half. In fact, I know one of the guys who's an NLP consultant to the Republicans. And so I'm going to arm you from the other side and give you some ammunition. So that'll be starting next week. This is the Tom Hartman Program. You're in the middle of the vast, radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitation.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. A collective bargaining battle in Missouri has escalated, with the state now appealing a judge's order upholding state employee unions' right to collect fair share fees from workers who benefit from contracts but are not actually members of the unions. The outgoing Democratic Governor Bob Holden issued an executive order allowing those collections, but Republican Secretary of State and now Governor-elect Matt Blunt is against it, and he refused to implement the order. A judge ruled against him and for the unions, but now Blunt says that he will rescind Governor Holden's order as soon as he takes power as governor in January. The state of Missouri is appealing this pro-union decision and wants the order put on hold while the appeal process unfolds. Missouri Governor Bob Holden in 2001 issued an executive order granting collective bargaining rights to thousands of state workers in Missouri. He also granted state employee unions the right to collect those fair share fees. This is one of the first post-election skirmishes between labor and Republicans.
Thousands of current or former federal employees in the National Guard are eligible for annual leave adjustments or other compensation. The American Federation of Government Employees won a major Court of Appeals case last year that forces a reversal of a policy implemented by the Office of Personnel Management. Under federal law, federal employees who are also reservists are allowed 15 days of military leave each year. However, because of a misinterpretation of the law by the OPM, employees were also charged for weekends and other scheduled days off. The AFGE is working to assist the OPM in reimbursing employees who were incorrectly charged. Joe Goldberg is the AFGE Assistant General Counsel.
The American Federation of Government Employees, which has offered its services to OPM to design an efficient and speedy pay process for National Guard reservists who are also federal employees.
This Veterans Day, past and present members of the U.S. Armed Forces are facing many challenges, the most apparent of which is the danger of fighting in Iraq, where 1,100 men and women have lost their lives. Another 4,000 suffered an injury serious enough to retire. Due to persistent underfunding of the VA hospital system, many sick or disabled veterans now have to wait for months to receive care. The Army has even tried to refuse benefits, claiming illnesses are due to pre-existing conditions.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. How much of the bill for the war in Iraq is your state paying for? Missouri, for example, is paying $2.7 billion for the war. In comparison, that state has only received $116 million for Homeland Security and only $349 million in federal funding for the No Child Left Behind Act. That's according to a new interactive map created by the Center for American Progress. Available at their website, www.americanprogress.org, the map even breaks down state-by-state spending on the war by major cities.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Have you been chipped yet? You could be soon, for the Food and Drug Administration has now cleared the way for a Florida corporation, Applied Digital Solutions, to market a tiny electronic device called VeriChip that is surgically implanted under the skin of your arm or hand. Don't worry, says the corporation soothingly. Being chipped doesn't hurt you, and it's really for your own good. For example, they say, if you have an accident, your implanted chip could contain vital medical information that could be accessed by an ambulance crew, assuming the crew has bought a handheld chip-reading scanner, which Applied Digital also happens to sell. Besides coup the corporate hawkers, being chipped is a matter of great personal convenience for you. No longer would you have to carry cumbersome ID cards to get into your workplace. You could have all the required ID stored on your chip, right inside your body. And think of the convenience of not having to fumble with credit cards. Instead, your credit numbers literally are implanted in you. So rather than running your cards through a scanner, a retailer can simply scan you. Talk about consumer progress. VeriChip turns your own body, your very own self, into a barcoded payment system. After all, says Applied Digital, our country has been implanting such devices in millions of cattle and pets, and it has worked beautifully. So why not humans? For you fussy libertarians who see Big Brother looming behind every scientific breakthrough like VeriChip, the company says that being implanted is voluntary. So where's the worry? This is Jim Hightower saying, the worry, of course, is that being chipped will not stay voluntary. Corporations and government will soon insist that their employees, frequent travelers, protesters, and others be tagged for security reasons. To rebel against this effort to turn us into a nation of cattle, call the Electronic Privacy Information Center, 202-488-1140.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror, my wife's still in bed, and this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing? Is that you? You're back.
Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's. Know who's really gelling? The King of Queens. Monday through Friday. Check your local listings.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, on cable systems in 29 states, on cable radio network. Quite a collection here. It's your basic hodgepodge. Welcome back to the program. It's the second hour of our Thursday program. Every Thursday in our second hour, we go a little beyond politics. to get into things that maybe you didn't know that you didn't know, that maybe it would be useful to know, but you didn't know that you didn't know, so you didn't know you didn't know it, and but maybe you should know, or maybe what you did know was not even right. In fact, maybe everything you know is wrong.
Know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync, and think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Could be. What do you know about air? Joe Sherman sure knows a lot about it. Gasp is his book, The Swift and Terrible Beauty of Air. The new book out, GASP! Gasp. Joe, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
You write in your book about, first of all, I got to say, reading through the book, one of my favorite anecdotes in the book was the story of the two guys in 1930 who went up in the helium balloon, and they had the machine to spin the thing around the gondola to warm and cool. This book is so full of cool stories. You know, it's one of these books that's heavily anecdotally written, and just to potential readers, I want to say it's a fine read, an easy read. You talk about the air in London, Paris, European cities back in the 17th and 18th centuries, the 1600s and 1700s. How was the air different than it is now?
Well, the basic makeup of the atmosphere is the same. It's obviously what we've added to it. And in certain areas of the world in the 16 and 1700s where they burned a lot of coal and a lot of wood, London, it stands out as the biggest example. The air was, you know, pretty badly polluted, and so people had a lot of respiratory problems, and there was soot everywhere, and it was kind of nasty. But now we've, as the Industrial Revolution kicked into gear, the number of pollutants just increased phenomenally, and so we have a atmosphere now that just has a lot of the same stuff they had in the 1600s for pollutants, but a lot more.
Yeah. Now, also, my understanding is that back in that era, you know, people used chamber pots and they'd pour them out windows and things, and there were not sophisticated sewage disposal systems that if you walked through most large cities of Europe, you smelled sewage as well as the burning coal and wood, right?
Yeah, that's true. You know, it's interesting. Aside, Tom, I always wondered when I was a younger man, my parents always told me, you know, you're supposed to walk on the outside of a woman when you were walking down the street with. And
right.
I guess that came from that whole thing. If, in fact, somebody threw a chamber pot out the window, it would go on you, and she would be somewhat protected.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Interesting. When did Los Angeles... Well, actually, here's another question. This is one that I've actually seen this in a couple of different places, and I thought it was fascinating. I've never seen any real solid documentation on it. I've just seen it mentioned anecdotally. And that is that because of the change in the levels of particulate matter in the air today, but perhaps most significantly because of the change in the proportion of greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide principally, methane secondarily, and water vapor, that the sky is actually a different color of blue than it was, say, 500 or 1,000 years ago, than it was for almost all of human history. And we are literally seeing a different sky than our ancestors did. Do you have any information on that?
Well, it will. I mean, the refractory capabilities of the atmosphere are often determined by what's in it. Amount of water vapor, number of pollutants, as you just mentioned, greenhouse gases. I mean, that's why when I used to live in L.A., people love the sunsets, I mean, because they're so full of so many pollutants. You know, they look like a kaleidoscope.
Right. Bright red and orange.
We have changed the atmosphere in significant ways, and slight changes of the color are one of the consequences.
Yeah, this was actually, my recollection is that I first heard this in a class back, you know, 35 years ago or more, that was talking about some of the old masters and why were the skies the color blue that they were in the paintings that were done in the 14th, 15th, 16th centuries. That was a different color blue than they would be in paintings done today. Is it that the paint has aged, or that the sky was actually a different color?
Well, the sky has changed certainly in specific cities. One young woman I know who used to be a model in Mexico City, and then she worked at an art school, told me that when she was working with young children painting and drawing in Mexico City schools, that it dawned on her that none of them painted or drew blue skies.
Yeah.
They were all tinted or gray or brownish. And it was just one of those things she had never thought about. And then she realized it was a consequence of Mexico City's air pollution, which is probably in an urban area, if not the worst on the planet, right up there.
Yeah. Now, back in the 20s, as I recall, back in the 1920s, the L.A. area had, you mentioned L.A. and the air there, and I remember back in the 70s, I'm a private pilot, and Louise and I had this little plane that we would occasionally rent, and we flew out to Los Angeles once, and I remember flying in and being able to actually see the whole skyline, you know, as if the pilot's eye view, and just being startled by this little, it looked like a bubble of brown with a yellow haze around the edge of it. That just sat on the city. I'd flown in jets before, but it had never been so clear and so obvious to me. And you talk about in your book how before a certain event happened, there was one of the best mass transit cities systems in the country in the Los Angeles area, Orange County, Ventura, San Bernardino, Riverside counties. What happened?
Well, the public transit system whole issue is fascinating because before World War II. The figures are that 80% of Americans lived within a 10-minute walk of a trolley. Trolleys led to trains. Trains went everywhere.
Before what year? Joe Sherman, what? Before what year?
This was before World War II.
Okay, before World War II.
Even during the Depression. In L.A., after World War II, when the automobile was totally embraced as this kind of addictive love object, General Motors kind of led the charge in buying up the privatized trolley systems and tearing up the tracks to, number one, get the tracks out of the streets so it was more easy flow of traffic, and needless to say also aiding the transition to people from taking public transportation to driving and automobiles.
They were actually.
And my whole feeling is that public transportation is, even though we don't deal with it very well in this country, is one of the most significant issues that we ignore, because not only all the environmental, economic aspects, but the sociological aspects of people traveling together in public transportation is phenomenally healthy.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, weren't General Motors and Firestone, as I recall, convicted of a conspiracy crime in that issue in Southern California?
That I'm not sure of.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that that's the case. In 1963, John Kennedy signed the Clean Air Act, the first significant legislation. Why did he gut the enforcement provisions of that act?
It was pretty much necessitated by the fact that otherwise the Congress would not pass the law at all. Kennedy was really rattled the traditional concept of states' rights, and the Clean Air Act was at its time one of the first and most broad federal provisions that had been yet put up on the legislative plate. And Kennedy really had to snuff, once again, a lot of the enforcement provisions just to get it passed, just to get the paperwork in place. And then it was over the next 5 or 6 years that the enforcement provisions were enacted and put in place.
Yeah, slowly. George W. Bush. What has his administration done? I actually had a conservative call a program the other day and say, I'm a Republican and I want my kids to have clean air, and that's why I voted for George Bush. You know about his Clear Skies initiative. We want clear skies. And so, set us straight here.
Yeah, well, these guys, the Bush administration, I don't think they're necessarily intrinsically bad, but they seem to be kind of blinded by the light of a capitalism and an unfettered capitalism, which generates a lot of pollution and has no regulations. And so they don't seem to see the dark side of the consequences of their ideology. And these guys are basically stealth ideologues. I mean, they deal in symbolism and euphemisms, such as the Clean Skies initiative. In a time when we have, I think it's 17 or 18,000 coal-fired power plants in this country, and we know statistically that they cause about 38,000, 39,000 heart attacks annually and are probably contribute to about 23,000 or 24,000 people dying. And the allowing them
to... Far more than 9/11, interesting.
Pardon me?
It's about 10 times the toll of 9/11.
Yeah, if we had a necrology of air, kind of a death chart, the air in the 20th century, from all the figures I have, has probably killed more people than all the wars put together, with the epidemic that wiped out people in 1917. I think it's the influenza epidemic.
Yeah.
Air, it's one of these things. One of the things that fascinated me when I was working on this book is the fact that air is somehow unmatched in its power to shape human affairs in ways that most folks are totally oblivious to.
Sure.
It's not only a screen that protects us from the sun, it warms us, it gives us the fuel and oxygen, and things that we take for granted we don't do much about, you know, such as air and friendship and things like that, and
sure,
a lot of environmental issues. And so the back to the Bush administration, I think they kind of recognize that people take this for granted, and they get away with virtually murder.
But what's the bottom? I mean, rather than speaking of it broadly, we've got about a minute and a half left here. Joe Sherman, the author of Gasp, what specifically has the Bush administration done to make our air worse?
Well, they have this Clean Air
Clear Skies
Clean
Initiative.
Skies Initiative is one thing, but the biggest thing is letting the power plants, about 50 of the biggest polluters in the country, really take a walk. The Justice Department was working out deals with them where they were finally going to have to belly up to the bar and spend the money for air pollution technologies to reduce their pollutants.
Scrubbers.
A lot of these are in the Midwest that kind of flow to the east. And
right,
the Bush administration, the president has the power to make specific rules. And the rules, the EPA rule that had to do with these power plants was buried.
Yeah, Clinton had passed that, and they had until last year, wasn't it, to clean up and
well,
Bush,
Clinton
Bush
basically the law existed. Clinton ratcheted it up the Justice Department to go after these guys because
right,
they had kind of been avoiding, they'd been getting around the law, which you can often do. The Justice Department put the screws on them. They were going to court. A lot of them had cut deals on to put scrubbers to dampen their emissions.
Joe, we gotta leave it there. Then the Bush administration let them off the hook. Yeah, we've been talking with Joe Sherman. He is the author of Gasp, The Swift and Terrible Beauty of Air. Joe, thanks so much for being with us today.
Okay, glad to be there.
On our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment, I appreciate it. 20 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Tonight on NBC, an all-new Joey and heartbreak over Kelly Preston.
I'm working on an audition for tomorrow. Thought maybe I could use all this heartache and make my performance more powerful.
Oh, boy, spicy sausages, mamma mia.
And on Will and Grace, a date for Grace.
And a new start.
Let me get on the horn right now to air Fat Champ.
Then The Apprentice. The stakes rise as it comes down to 8 finalists, followed by ER and a stunning performance by Ray Liotta. All-new NBC Tonight.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on a clerical error.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
15, there's still time for you.
And welcome back. Just to wrap up a few details on the election. Before we do that, our quote for the day from Albert Einstein. Given all of these, you know, issues of war and peace, as it were, Albert Einstein, he said, I do not know with what weapons World War III will be fought. But World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones. An issue that, for those of us who grew up in the 50s, 60s, 70s, the time of the Cold War and the Russians and all these missiles and everything, seemed very urgent. Now seems less urgent, but the missiles are still there. And, in fact, nuclear technology is proliferating, is increasing, spreading around the world. And Albert Einstein's concern, I think, is still legitimate. Speaking of war and peace and the things that motivate us, a post-election poll, this from the Washington Post yesterday, Alan Cooperman's column in the Washington Post, liberal Christians challenge values votes. This is fascinating. A post-election poll, 33% of voters said the nation's most urgent moral problem, was greed and materialism. If you caught the Frontline special on PBS a couple of nights ago about marketing, I forget the title of it. It was remarkable. It was just absolutely remarkable. Highly recommended. I'm sure that they'll replay it on public broadcast on PB, you know, on the public broadcasting television as a corporation for public broadcasting, whatever it is. And anyhow, 33% of voters in America say that this is our most urgent moral problem: greed and materialism. Which, of course, translates itself into a significant presence in the corporate boardroom. 31% said it was poverty and economic justice. Now, if you add those two together, if my math is right, that's 64%, or a significant majority of Americans, believe that our most difficult, our greatest moral challenges have to do with greed, materialism, poverty, and economic justice. In other words, economic issues that have social consequence. Only 16% cited abortion as moral problem, and only 12% named same-sex marriage as the most pressing moral problem in America. So I think that our media, in some ways, you know, some of the listeners of this program I know are very upset about, you know, the right wing have a mandate they've taken, you know. I think this has been greatly exaggerated by our corporate media. Why? Probably lazy reporting, frankly. It's an easy story, and you can bet that the talking points are coming out of the right-wing think tanks, out of Bob Jones University, out of the Republican National Committee, and its chairman, former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie. Now, some folks think that this the fact that, you know, 64% of Americans say that the most urgent moral problem facing the United States is greed and materialism or poverty and economic justice suggests that the Democratic Party should reach out to pro-life Democrats, Catholics, and evangelicals and have a serious conversation with them. As Alan Cooperman writes, about ways to reduce teenage pregnancy, facilitate adoptions, improve conditions for low-income women. He says it would work wonders among centrist evangelicals and Catholics. It's interesting. For more than 25 years, I've done on and off international relief work with an organization based in Germany that was founded by a fellow by the name of Gottfried Mueller, who's now 92. And he personally is opposed to abortion. But rather than working for legislation, what he did was he set up a home for women who were pregnant and said, if you don't want to have an abortion, but you don't have the means to produce, you know, to have a baby and have it put up for adoption, we'll help you out. This seems like the middle ground kind of stuff that could be used as outreach to people who are concerned about these issues. And frankly, I think the vast majority, in fact, Zogby International. Well, let me tell you about that right after this break. This is fascinating, what Zogby found when they did this poll. 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. A collective bargaining battle in Missouri has escalated, with the state now appealing a judge's order upholding state employee unions' right to collect fair share fees from workers who benefit from contracts but are not actually members of the unions. The outgoing Democratic governor, Bob Holden, issued an executive order allowing those collections, but Republican Secretary of State and now governor-elect Matt Blunt is against it, and he refused to implement the order. A judge ruled against him and for the unions, but now Blunt says that he will rescind Governor Holden's order as soon as he takes power as governor in January. The state of Missouri is appealing this pro-union decision and wants the order put on hold while the appeal process unfolds. Missouri Governor Bob Holden in 2001 issued an executive order granting collective bargaining rights to thousands of state workers in Missouri. He also granted state employee unions the right to collect those fair share fees. This is one of the first post-election skirmishes between labor and Republicans.
Thousands of current or former federal employees in the National Guard are eligible for annual leave adjustments or other compensation. The American Federation of Government Employees won a major Court of Appeals case last year that forces a reversal of a policy implemented by the Office of Personnel Management. Under federal law, federal employees who are also reservists are allowed 15 days of military leave each year. However, because of a misinterpretation of the law by the OPM, employees were also charged for weekends and other scheduled days off. The AFGE is working to assist the OPM in reimbursing employees who were incorrectly charged. Joe Goldberg is the AFGE Assistant General Counsel.
The American Federation of Government Employees, which has offered its services to OPM to design an efficient and speedy pay process for National Guard reservists who are also federal employees.
This Veterans Day, past and present members of the U.S. Armed Forces are facing many challenges, the most apparent of which is the danger of fighting in Iraq, where 1,100 men and women have lost their lives. Another 4,000 suffered an injury serious enough to retire. Due to persistent underfunding of the VA hospital system, many sick or disabled veterans now have to wait for months to receive care. The Army has even tried to refuse benefits, claiming illnesses are due to pre-existing conditions.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. How much of the bill for the war in Iraq is your state paying for? Missouri, for example, is paying $2.7 billion for the war. In comparison, that state has only received $116 million for Homeland Security and only $349 million in federal funding for the No Child Left Behind Act. That's according to a new interactive map created by the Center for American Progress. Available at their website, www.americanprogress.org, the map even breaks down state-by-state spending on the war by major cities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 27 minutes before the hour. By the way, we're just having an interesting discussion in the chat room. I during the breaks here, I very often just hang out in the chat room and talk with people. And there's a discussion going on about taxes and flat taxes and inheritance taxes, what the cons have renamed the death tax and things like that. And there's a point that I so wish the Democrats would simply take and say, this is a moral issue. We're going to make this a moral issue and run with it. And it is, this is how you can fix Social Security tomorrow morning. Right now, people only have to pay taxes into the Social Security fund on their first, roughly, as I recall, it's $78,000 in income. Roughly $80,000 in earned income. So if somebody earns $500,000 a year, they pay the same income tax that you and I pay on that first $70,000 or $80,000, assuming that you make less than that. And after that, they don't pay any, none. On the rest of it, it's like, why are we giving people a free ride? If we simply eliminated the cap on FICA and said the payroll tax is, you know, whatever it is, 7.3%. I forget what the percentage is, but the payroll tax that goes to fund Social Security and Medicaid is going to apply to all income, not just the first $80,000 more or less of income. Then you would have enough money to fund Social Security and Medicare and a fully funded health care system to a large extent forever. Forever, you could bring everybody into Medicare. I mean, it's mind-boggling what it would do, how much revenue it would produce. But why has that never been raised? Maybe it's because they're afraid that there are so many voters who are making between, you know, $70,000 and $200,000 that maybe they should make it a donut. They should go, oh, yeah, on the first $70,000 you pay income tax, and then on the next up to $200,000 you don't, and then over $200,000 you have to pay income tax, or you have to pay FICA again, you have to pay Social Security tax. I think that there's, you know, solutions in there. There's ways to fix this. Anyhow, with regards to values, this I just want to share this. This is a Zogby poll that was done after the election. This is not an exit poll. This was an actual calling up people vote. That was done by Zogby International. It was paid for by a Catholic group, actually, Pax Christi, which is a part of Pax. Or Res Publica, and in part paid for them. And they found that 42% of voters cited the war in Iraq as the moral issue that most influenced their choice of candidates. 13% cited abortion, 9% cited same-sex marriage. 42% of voters said the moral issue that most influenced their choice of candidates was the war in Iraq. Now, somebody called me with a poll And they didn't identify. I mean, you know, I got the polling company name, but I don't know who's paying for the thing. And they said, "Do you vote on moral issues?" And I said, "Well, if you mean moral issues as in, am I one of those people who's afraid of gay marriage? No. If you mean moral issues as in, I think the invasion of Iraq was immoral, yes." And the guy said, "Well, which is it?" And he said, "Well, I think we're talking here about gay marriage." It was weird. So Zogby goes out and they actually say to people, what's the moral issue that most influences your choice of candidates? 42% say the Iraq, 13% abortion, 9% same-sex marriage. Asked to name the greatest threat to marriage, 31% said infidelity. 25% said rising financial burdens, and only 22% said same-sex marriage was a threat to marriage. You know, as I mentioned earlier, today, Louise and I have been married 32 years, I think. Maybe 33. I'd have to go back and do the math. I'm pretty sure it's 32 years. And, you know, when civil unions were made legal here in Vermont, I didn't all of a sudden start thinking, I mean, it's like, how can gay marriage be a threat to marriage? I don't get it. But anyhow, Tom Perillo, an organizer at Res Publica, says the poll shows that while there may be a solid 20% who are very focused on abortion and gay marriage, for most Americans of faith, there are other moral issues of greater urgency, and that's where the religious middle is. I find this fascinating. The post-election poll found that 71% of voters had heard from the religious right, while 38% said they'd heard from the religious left. So there's work to be done. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Florence in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Florence, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, thank you. And my comments will fit right into what you're talking about.
Right.
And I don't know whether you've read it or not, but in the New York Times, Frank Rich has a marvelous article about the fact that this is nothing but Republican, I hate to use that, but BS.
Yeah, spin, let's say, you know, yes.
Pardon me?
Spin, let's call it.
Well, whatever.
Yeah.
All I know is that I think Frank Rich has got a hold of something.
Yeah.
Because he's talking about the fact that if they're on a moral crusade, they should give up Fox.
Yeah. Well said. Well said, Frank.
And it goes right along with the Zogby.
Yeah, yeah. It's
and why is it that people just clamor to accept any excuse?
Yeah, it's and I believe that the Zogby poll was of people who define themselves. Well, maybe it wasn't. No, it was a poll of 10,689 voters. Yeah, and
right,
what's the most significant?
And I'm familiar with Pax Christi and Riz.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I'm trying, I don't understand why 24/7 media and all of these people just fall right into that bag, that group thinking that, oh my God, we've got to go to the red states and do some conversions or whatever.
Well, I think the reason why, Florence, boils down to a few billion dollars that have been given to right-wing think tanks over the last 30 years, principally by, you know, the Richard Mellon Scaife Foundation, the Coors family, Joe Coors' Castle Rock Foundation, and then they created the environment and in some cases funded right-wing radio talk shows and brought them out.
Well,
and
absolutely.
And now you've got, you know,
inundated.
Yeah, you've got over 600 hours a day, okay, every single day of right-wing talk radio in America, and maybe 35 hours a day of progressive talk radio. And, you know, prior to 2 years ago, when I started doing this program, there was pretty much none that I know of.
I know.
And so I think this is what you're seeing. And, frankly, I think it's going to change. I think the times are changing. Florence, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Bill, also in Grand Rapids. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Tom. Grand Rapids back to back, eh?
There you go. It's a hot day in western Michigan.
It's a beautiful November day. Listen, I agree with you that as disappointing as this election is, it's a great opportunity for progressives to sort of take stock and reorganize and get busy with the future. I just have a suggestion/challenge for you. You are extremely articulate, extremely well-read, well-versed. I would love for you to put together maybe on your website a list, like a top 10 list, books, 10 books that progressives should read to get a handle on what's happened and what we can do to change things. I'm thinking of books like, really enjoyed What Happened to Kansas, which talks about the whole
Tom
values
Rich's book.
Thing. And you recently reviewed on BuzzFlash. Is it George Lakoff or Lakoff?
Yeah, George Lakoff. Yeah, I've been doing that on BuzzFlash every month. And in fact, if you go back to the archives, there's about 4 months' worth of books there. I think we've been doing it for 4 months now, maybe five. That I still recommend reading. One of them was Class Warfare in America by Charles Kelly, which is a brilliant book. Even though it came out almost 5 years ago, it's brilliant. Another one is The Fourth Turning, which I think is something that everybody should be reading. It's a very significant book. Again, it's been out for a couple of years, but it's just, you know, some really foundational stuff. Lakoff's book is brand new, along with the DVD. That's the one this month. Next month, I haven't made the decision yet. In fact, by this weekend, there's a couple of books that I'm looking at. But yeah, I'm doing that through BuzzFlash, and the other thing that I'm working on, that Louise and I are working on, is putting together essentially a contract with America kind of thing, you know, a list, as Newt did, a list of the top issues that progressives really need to be focusing on, and framing them using the tools of NLP, framing them in a way that they will reach out to people beyond, you know, so it's not just in progressive code speak. You know,
right.
so they'll reach across the divide and reach out to everyone. I think this is really.
You're doing stuff on Tuesday afternoon during the.
Well, that's our tentative plan. Yeah, we're going to do it once a week. We're not sure exactly when, and a lot's going to depend on the general madness this weekend. It's I've just been doing so many radio and TV interviews around this election stuff, and I think it's going to slow down a little bit. But
that's wonderful. We need someone to focus. Focus us on positive things. I love reading some of the stuff out there. It's fun to read the Al Franken books, but we need something with some depth to kind of look toward the future and what do we build.
Well, this is,
I think you can do that for us.
Yeah, and I intend to. I mean, this is what back in the early 70s when in Michigan when I was a partner in an ad agency there and in the 90s in Atlanta when I was the president of an ad agency there, it's what I did for a living was teaching corporations how to communicate this stuff and government agencies and everything. You know, we had all kinds of clients. And why not teach all our listeners this stuff? I mean, you know, why not? So we're going to get into this.
Great idea.
So,
keep up the good work, Tom.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's go to Michael in Santa Fe. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind?
Hey, everybody in Santa Fe, meet me tomorrow at Camino Entrada, 12:30 to protest. Come out and get thrown off the air. My number is 699-8252, KTRC. Thanks, bye.
Okay, Michael. A good fast one there. I suspect it was too fast for anyone to catch. But anyhow, Canada, how about a preemptive strike? This is great. Katrina Vandehuvel, the publisher of The Nation, writes this piece, the Republican Dictionary. And she starts it out with this rhetorical question. Canada's leaders are a bunch of socialists hostile to our president, just like the Baathists were. Well, that's an interesting one. Canada might have hidden stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction. Yeah, I'd say there's probably a reasonable possibility that Canada has a military that has some sophisticated weaponry. It possesses a natural resource critical to our people's security, cheap prescription drugs. I would also add Canada controls a heck of a lot of oil, perhaps more than we do now, because we've been pumping ours so aggressively and so rapidly. And historically speaking, attacking Canada would be almost as bad an idea as attacking Iraq was. She says, see Quebec Battle of 1812, War of, yes. The first stage of this battle is to understand our opponents, she says, who are as bold as they are devious. And then she has this Republican Dictionary. And this is great. Katrina, you did a wonderful job with this. Bipartisanship, when conservative Republicans work together with moderate Republicans to pass legislation Democrats hate. Clarify. Repeating the same lie over and over again. Clean. The word used to modify any aspect of the environment Republican legislation allows corporations to pollute, poison, or destroy. Fairer. Regressive. Faith. The stubborn belief that God approves of Republican moral values despite the preponderance of textual evidence to the contrary. Faith community. Evangelicals because they are saved and hawkish conservative Jews because they are useful. Israel is the bait on the hook just waiting for God to take the rapture bite. fiscal conservative, a Republican who's in the minority. That's a good one. Freedom, what Arabs want but can't achieve on their own without Western military intervention. It bears a striking resemblance to chaos. Growth, a noun, the justification for tax cuts for the rich. What happens to the deficits, however, when Republicans cut taxes on the rich? Honesty. In the Republican dictionary, honesty means lies told in simple declarative sentences. Freedom is on the march. Humble foreign policy. The invasion of any sovereign nation whose leadership Republicans don't like. And on it goes. It's fascinating. Let's take a phone call here. Tom in St. Paul, Minnesota on the line. Hey, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, a couple things. You know, this thing on morality, when you really look at it, all they're worried about is sexual morality. That's what they're about. It's this Puritan thing in the culture, you know, the forbidden fruit dynamic here. And when you think about it, the gays, wrong sex.
Tom, here's the big difference between conservative morality and liberal morality or progressive morality. Conservatives think that morality is about what people do in private. In other words, what you're doing in your bedroom,
yeah,
or in your own home or whatever. You know, it's what people do in private. Are they smoking pot in their living room?
Right.
Liberals think that morality is about what we collectively do in public.
Right.
Are there poor among us? Are there homeless among us? Are there hungry among us?
Yes,
are there people
testament.
Who can't get health care? Exactly. Matthew 24. Matthew 24, the only place in the entire Bible where Jesus sits down and says, here's what you have to do to get into heaven. And he says specifically, you know, if you know, echoing Paul's, you know, faith without works is dead, or I believe that was James actually. He says, feed the hungry, clothe the naked, visit those in prison, heal the sick. I mean, it's explicit. That is liberal morality. Conservative morality is what people do in private, and that's the distinction.
And they focus on the Old Testament, judgment and punishment, eye for an eye. And it seems like the liberals tend... Well, Jesus was a liberal when you read the New Testament.
Oh, Jesus. I've got a bumper sticker that says, Jesus, the original liberal.
Yeah. But also another book to recommend, a guy was saying, there's a good one by a former Republican, Kevin Phillips, Wealth and Democracy.
Yes, it's brilliant.
And what's really nice about this, well, he talks about the Second Gilded Age, but he makes a really good point at the end, and the afterword, talks about how Limbaugh and his ilk have succeeded in hoodwinking or conflating democracy with capitalism in pretended equivalence.
That's right.
It confused these right wingers think democracy and capitalism is the same thing.
Yeah, and they're very different things. One is a political system, the other is an economic system.
Exactly.
And very good point, Tom. Thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. And something that we need to focus on more and talk about more. And in fact, well, you know me, I intend to. We will be doing it as time goes on. We're going to get back to the basics here in this program. 10 minutes before the hour. Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a Win feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. George Bush will remain in the White House, and with Republican control of both the House and Senate and freed of re-election concerns, he has free rein to impose a so-called ownership society. This buzzword stands in for a host of policies Republicans are itching to thrust upon America.
I'd say that the hallmark of the ownership society is privatizing Social Security.
Gretchen Young is the Vice President of Government Affairs for Ann Consulting.
The two other major elements in the benefits arena are health savings accounts, where individuals take more responsibility, and then there's also an element in the retirement part of the agenda, which would emphasize something called a lifetime savings account.
Young says under the president's proposal, individuals would get a $300 grant to seed their health savings account, or HSA, and a $700 tax credit.
For people who did not want to go the HSA route, they would get a $3,000 tax credit for purchasing family health insurance, or $1,000 for purchasing individual health insurance. So these will not cover the cost of health insurance, but these will certainly go a long way to helping these individuals get health insurance.
Ownership society, what you find is that it's talking about ownership, but it mentions nothing about the precursor of ownership, which is income.
Jack Minnis is an economist.
Everything that Bush has done in the 3.5 years he's been in office is to curtail or suppress consumer income. And how one gets from lack of income to ownership is a mystery unless he is prepared to legalize bank robbery.
According to the Tax Foundation analysis of IRS statistics, 58 million income-earning households pay no income taxes, 94% of which earn less than $40,000 per year. So a health care tax break doesn't help low-income workers. With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Happy Veterans Day.
In liberating strife.
On the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, World War I came to an end. And that has been Veterans Day ever since. It was also the hour that I married one of the most extraordinary and wonderful people in the world, Louise. 32 years ago. Anyhow, here, Ed Gillespie. Boy, what a transition from Louise to Ed Gillespie. Sorry, Louise. Former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie is calling now for an end to exit polls. An end to exit polls. We shouldn't have many more, he says. In fact, he says, I've been through this before. In 2000, the exit data was wrong on Election Day, a Bush election. In 2002, the exit returns were wrong on Election Day, another Bush election. And in 2004, the exit data were wrong on Election Day. All three times, by the way, in a way that skewed against Republicans and had a dispiriting effect on Republican voters across the country, says Ed Gillespie. Interesting. Ever since this very rapid proliferation of electronic voting machines and the information getting out there about how to hack them, the exit polls have been skewing in a way that shows Republicans losing when the electronic voting machines and optical scanners say that the Republicans are winning. And Ed Gillespie says, therefore, former Enron lobbyist and Republican National Committee chairman Ed Gillespie says, therefore, time to do away with exit polls. He says, I would encourage the media to abandon exit surveys on Election Day and do what we do in the political profession, look at the precincts and the turnouts, see who's turning out to vote. Don't build a model that you try to, you know, build your own thoughts into what you expect it to be. Yeah, right. Exit polling is building our own thoughts into what we expect. Why are the Republicans so opposed to accountability on electronic voting machines? Why do the Republicans not want there to be a paper trail on electronic voting machines? Why do they want the electronic voting machines software to be held in corporate hands and unaccountable to we the people, and they fight against open source software? Why do they now want to abandon exit polls? Could it be that there is actually a Stalinist agenda here of single-party rule? Yes, we'll tolerate other parties, but they're not ever going to have power again. Could it be? I don't know. Maybe I'm wearing a tinfoil hat. Maybe I'm paranoid, but it just raises the question, let's say. It just raises the question.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. A collective bargaining battle in Missouri has escalated, with the state now appealing a judge's order upholding state employee unions' right to collect fair share fees from workers who benefit from contracts but are not actually members of the unions. The outgoing Democratic Governor Bob Holden issued an executive order allowing those collections, but Republican Secretary of State and now Governor-elect Matt Blunt is against it, and he refused to implement the order. A judge ruled against him and for the unions, but now Blunt says that he will rescind Governor Holden's order as soon as he takes power as governor in January. The state of Missouri is appealing this pro-union decision and wants the order put on hold while the appeal process unfolds. Missouri Governor Bob Holden in 2001 issued an executive order granting collective bargaining rights to thousands of state workers in Missouri. He also granted state employee unions the right to collect those fair share fees. This is one of the first post-election skirmishes between labor and Republicans.
Thousands of current or former federal employees in the National Guard are eligible for annual leave adjustments or other compensation. The American Federation of Government Employees won a major Court of Appeals case last year that forces a reversal of a policy implemented by the Office of Personnel Management. Under federal law, federal employees who are also reservists are allowed 15 days of military leave each year. However, because of a misinterpretation of the law by the OPM, employees were also charged for weekends and other scheduled days off. The AFGE is working to assist the OPM in reimbursing employees who were incorrectly charged. Joe Goldberg is the AFGE Assistant General Counsel.
The American Federation of Government Employees, which has offered its services to OPM to design an efficient and speedy pay process for National Guard reservists who are also federal employees.
This Veterans Day, past and present members of the U.S. Armed Forces are facing many challenges, the most apparent of which is the danger of fighting in Iraq, where 1,100 men and women have lost their lives. Another 4,000 suffered an injury serious enough to retire. Due to persistent underfunding of the VA hospital system, many sick or disabled veterans now have to wait for months to receive care. The Army has even tried to refuse benefits, claiming illnesses are due to pre-existing conditions.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. How much of the bill for the war in Iraq is your state paying for? Missouri, for example, is paying $2.7 billion for the war. In comparison, that state has only received $116 million for Homeland Security and only $349 million in federal funding for the No Child Left Behind Act. That's according to a new interactive map created by the Center for American Progress. Available at their website, www.americanprogress.org, the map even breaks down state-by-state spending on the war by major cities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
The U.S. Air Force is in rapture over its new baby, which it has named Raptor. We taxpayers, however, can be forgiven if we're less than enraptured by the recent birth of this F-A-22 fighter jet. For it's the most expensive warplane in history, it's not needed, and there are serious doubts about whether it'll even work. The Raptor was conceived 23 years ago in the heat of the Cold War. It was intended to replace the trusty F-15 fighter and was designed to battle a new jet the Soviets were developing. But the Soviet jet never got off the ground, the Soviet Union itself collapsed, the Cold War is long gone, and the enemies we battle today are far different, requiring entirely different weaponry. Indeed, no one threatening the U.S. today has an air force that can even battle the old reliable F-15s. Despite the changed world, however, Lockheed Martin, the maker of Raptor, just kept pushing ahead, using its campaign contributions and lobbying clout to keep Congress feeding our tax dollars into this voracious boondoggle. Lockheed brags that the F-A-22 is the most technologically advanced plane ever built, but what it does best is eat money. Each Raptor costs us $258 million, and the Air Force is buying 277 of them. That's nearly four times the price tag originally submitted by Lockheed. Is the company accountable for such a gross cost overrun? No, no, Nanette. Lockheed got a sweetheart deal called a cost-plus contract, which bills all overruns to you and me, not to the corporation. What do we get for our billions? A flawed product. In March, Congress's budget office reported that the Raptor, quote, was not meeting its requirements for a reliable aircraft. Nonetheless, the Air Force is now deploying them. This is Jim Hightower saying, by the way, the day before Lockheed delivered its first Raptor, it announced a 41% jump in its profits.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror, my wife's still in bed, and this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing, is that you? You're back.
Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massage and gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's. Know who's really gelling? The King of Queens. Monday through Friday. Check your local listings.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the third hour of our program here. Tom Hartman with you, 7 minutes past the hour, broadcasting from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone, high up in the green mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, streaming around the world on radiopower.org and on radio stations from California to North Carolina. A coronation is coming. You thought there was an inauguration coming, right? I'll bet you thought that. You know, in 1977, Jimmy Carter tried to scale this back. He said, you know, this is getting out of control, this stuff. All these inaugural balls, you know, we don't elect kings in the United States. We elect presidents. And so they changed the name of them in 77 from inaugural balls to parties. He tried to strip out the glitz and the glamour. He said that you couldn't charge more than $25 to attend one. Well, you know, that didn't last long. Reagan came in. And the ceremony in 1985, his inauguration, the ceremony was moved to the Capitol's West Front, which could accommodate more spectators and TV cameras. Has a grand view, the National Mall, the reflecting pool, the Washington Monument. Did you know the construction on the Capitol's West Front Terrace for this coming inauguration, this January, began last October? Well, last month. Yeah. Yep. They plan this thing well in advance. They're going to have 21-gun salutes, fancy dress balls, tighter-than-ever security. As the Associated Press notes, it will resemble nothing so much as a coronation. There'll be nothing low-key about the day, as was the case, for example, in 1945, when a war-weary Franklin Roosevelt was sworn in for his fourth term in a simple ceremony in the White House South Portico. Just the opposite, in fact. Trent Lott says it will, or Steve Hess, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, it will be a celebration of bringing democracy and freedom to other people. Yes, that's our job. That's why we created the United States, so we could go around the world and tell people that they should have the same kind of government that we have. That's what we did. Amazing. This is. You know, this ongoing idea that there is that the administration is headed by a king. I mean, this is the most secretive administration in the history of the United States. They have classified more things. The most vengeful. You know, you step out of line one step. Paul Bremer was probably going to be Secretary of State. No more. Joe Wilson just made the mistake of telling the truth, end of his wife's career, and on and on. By the way, if you have doubts about the vote, and you want to help fund a recount, there's a new fund. It's put together by Bev Harris, the folks at Black Box Voting, and the National Ballot Integrity Project, collectively. It's a new nonprofit, 527. It's called Help America Recount Fund, and their website is helpamericarecount.org. Helpamericarecount.org. If you want to get activist about it and toss $20 their way or whatever, they are leading the charge for recounts in Ohio and Florida. Not that anybody thinks it's necessarily going to do any good. We'll see. But, you know, just let's bring this topic up. It's important that we have honest elections, that we be able to trust the integrity of our election process. As Congressman John Conyers said in the first hour of our program here today, you know, if people don't trust the integrity of the election process, if they just say, well, you know, private corporations are handling the vote, and you know how they are. I mean, yeah, we know all about the integrity of Enron. And if private corporations are handling the vote, so, you know, I'm not going to show up. I mean, how many young people who came out to vote this time are going to vote 4 years from now if they think that the vote is rigged? Or 2 years from now? The very important midterm elections. Very important. Critical elections in 2 years. That we need to be working on right now and planning for. I don't think a lot. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. TomHartmann.com, our website, if you'd like to drop into our live chat hosted on the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, or if you want to drop into our message board, some 30, 35,000 messages in there, lively conversations, fascinating folks, some of the best and most interesting and entertaining stuff going on the Internet, all free, all just right there, TomHartmann.com. And, of course, our toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894. In fact, let's take a phone call here. Preston in Denver, Colorado on the line. Hey, Preston, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. Regarding the election, here in Colorado, we actually had some progressive developments. Ken Salazar, the Democrat, defeated Pete Coors. And his brother, John, also a Democrat, is going to the House of Representatives.
Yeah, that defeat of Pete Coors really did my heart good, because it was his father who endowed the Heritage Foundation and really got the ball rolling back in the early 70s on the whole, right-wing talk radio, the whole Reagan so-called revolution, the beginning of the end of the American middle class. Really started the conservative agenda going, and thank God his son didn't make it into the United States Senate.
Yeah, and Democrats also took over the state Senate and the state House for the first time in 40 years, and we passed a landmark renewable energy initiative, and also we raised the tax to build 119 miles of light rail around Denver. So it wasn't all bad at all.
That's interesting. Did Colorado go for Bush or for Kerry?
It went for Bush.
Yet people were voting Democratic for everything local.
That's right. And
that's
similarly
really
in other states, they had the living wage initiatives passed in Nevada and Florida.
Yep.
And I think there's a lot of stuff going on locally that's positive.
Yeah, I went through a list of it yesterday. There was a really good summary of all the progressive victories.
Thank you. Yeah. And regarding resources and kind of being media activists ourselves, I was listening to Mike Molloy's program last night, and he told a story about how this very vicious, fear-inducing DVD had been distributed through gas stations by a group that wanted to, cultivate hate towards the Iraqi people. And I noticed on your website that your DVD is available from C-SPAN. Yeah. And I think if people wanted to, promote a progressive message, they could get a hold of that and get it into our public libraries and onto the shelves of the Goodwill.
Well, that's an idea.
And to their neighbors.
It's a 3-hour Hartman rant, I'll tell you. I sat there for 3 hours and didn't even go to the bathroom. It was a wild day.
Great. Well, I look forward to checking out the DVD. I only call it part of that program.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed what I heard. And I think there are a lot of resources like that we can be connecting with, utilizing. And Yes Magazine, I think, is another one that provides great independent and some critical and some very hopeful information.
Yeah, Yes Magazine is excellent. I've written for them several times, did a cover story for them last year. Fran Corton, David Corton's wife, started that.
Oh, great.
And,
great. You should speak with her sometime.
I know them. I've stayed in their home. I know them. In fact, we spent a week together in India at the Dalai Lama's home four years ago.
You know, I meant to ask you, Tom, how was the Solar Living Festival that you spoke at and attended a couple months ago?
Soulfest? That was a hoot. It was absolutely great. It was and so much good information was being presented on how viable now solar energy is as an alternative to nuclear or coal or oil. Last night on Chris Matthews, he had on Pete Domenici from New Mexico. He's got this new book out about how we all need to go to nuclear power the way France did. Well, what he completely ignores is that, that's the last generation's energy source, the new energy source. If we could go to solar power right now in the United States, solar and wind could supply all of the energy needs of this country with existing technology at roughly the same cost that we have right now and much lower environmental costs.
Yeah, and one last comment,
sure.
since it is Veterans Day, there's a magazine called The Sun that has interviewed a veteran named Stan Goff. He spent 20 years in Special Forces.
Mm-hmm.
And Stan Goff, to me, is kind of like this era's General Smedley Butler. And if people want to take a moment and hear some wise words from a veteran, I'd recommend the November issue of The Sun magazine.
Okay, The Sun's published out of Santa Fe, isn't it?
Chapel Hill.
Oh, okay. Chapman.
Yeah, and it's okay. I think it's, you know, has a membership of like a subscriber list of like 70,000 people.
That's
and,
great.
You know, if you look around this society, sometimes we get kind of focused and depressed over the corporate media and how big and huge it is. But I think they're, how they project themselves makes them look larger than they appear.
Oh,
kind
it's
like the
for
Wizard
sure.
of Oz did.
Yeah, it very much is the Wizard of Oz. The vast majority of Americans are really right here in the radical middle, as it you know, as it were. You know, they would like to know that they have job security. They would like to know that they have pensions or retirement. They would like Social Security to work and to really be an insurance system. You know, so that if they fall through the cracks, they will get caught by the social safety net. They don't want, you know, poor people and homeless people on the streets. They're willing to pay a little extra taxes to make sure that we have a fair and just society and that our schools work. These right-wing cranks represent a very, very small minority in America.
Yeah.
You know,
and the people on the right wing, some of the you know people who have been hanatized maybe, they would like independent information, and if we have access to it, I think you know for us to begin to bridge the gap.
Yeah, I agree.
We can reach out to them.
Yeah, I agree, Preston. We need to be reaching out. And we need to be speaking to them. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's go to Bill in Florida. Hey, Bill, what's on your mind?
Hey, I'm real intrigued.
Bill, you're going to have to get right up on your phone and speak much louder.
There we go.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, I had you on hold because I'm not sure how long I'm going to be waiting. You published the article on the 8th about the candidate for. Sorry, I got an autistic child here and doesn't understand what's going on.
That's quite all right.
Yeah. I got it from truthout.org.
Yeah, about Jeff Fisher, the congressional
Jeff Fisher,
candidate in Florida.
That's his name? Okay.
Yeah.
I got to get info on Jeff because we want to give him support, as much support as possible.
Yeah.
I imagine verified voting and the other guys are doing what they can to help him.
Yeah, well, I just don't know. I've been waiting to hear back from Jeff. When I talked to Jeff, this was last Saturday. He said he was hiding out. He said he couldn't go back to his home. He'd been getting death threats. He was waiting for the FBI to show up.
He may wait a long time.
Yeah, Ashcroft's FBI, and he claims that he has information about who the hackers are and where they came from and why they're hacking, and he shared that information with me. I've been unable to verify any of it, so I didn't publish it in the story. I'm just waiting to hear back from him. If I do hear back from him anything at all that can be backed up or verified, I will publish it immediately and share it with you.
My wife is a pretty savvy lady, and when I read her pieces of the article, she said, "God bless that guy, and I hope he's still there."
Yeah, well, I hope so too. I haven't heard from him in several days. I'm going to call him again probably tonight if I have a chance. Bill,
really would appreciate your following up in a big way on this.
Oh, I intend to. I am going to follow up on it, Bill. Bill, we're out of time. I got to go. Thanks for the call, though, and we definitely will be following up on this. There's it's just too much not to. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here is today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
There's a brand new dance just hit this town.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. The things you learn when you hang out in the chat room. Speculation. Will Dick Cheney serve out his term the next 4 years? That's a fascinating question. Because if the Republicans wanted to set up secession, is that the correct use of the word? You know, the next person coming along, yeah, the next person in secession. Secession. The way to do it would be to have a vice president who could become a presidential candidate in 2008. And so if, for example, Dick says a year into the term, he says, you know, the old ticker is giving me a problem here. I think I'm going to resign. Let's put in Jeb as vice president. I wouldn't put it past him. Or, you know, Rudy. Or McCain. Or whatever. You know, whoever they... Chuck Hagel, actually, is the guy who's been... You know, the former president of the voting machine company that is now ES&S, the guy that has been jockeying the hardest, I think, for this, trying to position himself. So that's an interesting thought, and thanks for sharing that with me, Gray. I appreciate that there in the chat room. Also, Narlodia is telling us that she contacted Small Dog Electronics, one of our sponsors. You can call them at 1-800-511-MAX, 511-MACS, and actually got the owner of the business on the line to talk about their website and stuff and, you know, some customer service issues. How often can you call a company and get through to somebody who can really do something. This Small Dog Electronics has sponsored this program for, I think, over a year now, and they are just absolutely great people. If you have any computer needs whatsoever, 1-800-511-MAX is their telephone number, and tell them we sent you. What the heck happened in Los Angeles last night? This, the story is developing. A couple of tanks, not full tanks. These are actually light armored vehicles, but they look like tanks. They're like on truck beds, and they're armored, and they got a guy up at the top with a machine gun and a turret and the whole bit. Two of these things showed up in front of a peaceful anti-Bush protest last night in Los Angeles. Now, I'm not kidding. I guess it was the night before last. It must have been the 9th. Well, no, it was last night, apparently. It's unknown at the moment whether the protesters had permits or what the rationale for bringing an armored response was by the officials. Here's the story from Indy Media. At 7:50 p.m., two armored tanks showed up at an anti-war protest in front of the federal building in Westwood. The tanks circled the block twice, the second time parking themselves in the street directly in front of the area where most of the protesters were gathered. Enraged, some of the people attempted to block the tanks, but police quickly cleared the street. The people continued to protest the presence of the tanks, but about 10 minutes later, the tanks drove off. It's unclear as to why they were deployed to this location. One report suggests that there was a Veterans Day parade going on in the area, and they might have been part of that. Others suggest that the administration was planning for mass eruptions and protests all across the United States on the scale of the anti-war protests back in 2002 in the event that the election was close, and they had these light armored vehicles and National Guard units and whatnot out in force everywhere ready for this. And so we had one little protest in Westwood, California, and boom, there they are. Let's not put these light armored vehicles to waste. I mean, we got some machine guns here. We need to point them at some people. The militarization of the United States, one of the more disturbing aspects of the Bush administration, the free speech zones and just this wholesale militarization, a very, very, frankly, anti-democratic, anti-American way of doing things. You know, we don't have stormtroopers in the United States, or at least we didn't before George W. Bush became president. 29 minutes past the hour.
Tonight on NBC, an all-new Joey and heartbreak over Kelly Preston.
I'm working on an audition for tomorrow. Thought maybe I could use all this heartache and make my performance more powerful.
Oh, boy, spicy sausages, mamma mia.
And on Will and Grace, a date for Grace.
And a new start.
Let me get on the horn right now to air Fat Champ.
Then The Apprentice. The stakes rise as it comes down to 8 finalists. Followed by ER and a stunning performance by Ray Liotta. All new NBC tonight.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. A collective bargaining battle in Missouri has escalated, with the state now appealing a judge's order upholding state employee unions' right to collect fair share fees from workers who benefit from contracts but are not actually members of the unions. The outgoing Democratic Governor Bob Holden issued an executive order allowing those collections, but Republican Secretary of State and now Governor-elect Matt Blunt is against it, and he refused to implement the order. A judge ruled against him and for the unions, but now Blunt says that he will rescind Governor Holden's order as soon as he takes power as governor in January. The state of Missouri is appealing this pro-union decision and wants the order put on hold while the appeal process unfolds. Missouri Governor Bob Holden in 2001 issued an executive order granting collective bargaining rights to thousands of state workers in Missouri. He also granted state employee unions the right to collect those fair share fees. This is one of the first post-election skirmishes between labor and Republicans.
Thousands of current or former federal employees in the National Guard are eligible for annual leave adjustments or other compensation. The American Federation of Government Employees won a major Court of Appeals case last year that forces a reversal of a policy implemented by the Office of Personnel Management. Under federal law, federal employees who are also reservists are allowed 15 days of military leave each year. However, because of a misinterpretation of the law by the OPM, employees were also charged for weekends and other scheduled days off. The AFGE is working to assist the OPM in reimbursing employees who were incorrectly charged. Joe Goldberg is the AFGE Assistant General Counsel.
The American Federation of Government Employees, which has offered its services to OPM to design an efficient and speedy pay process for National Guard reservists who are also federal employees.
This Veterans Day, past and present members of the U.S. Armed Forces are facing many challenges, the most apparent of which is the danger of fighting in Iraq, where 1,100 men and women have lost their lives. Another 4,000 suffered an injury serious enough to retire. Due to persistent underfunding of the VA hospital system, many sick or disabled veterans now have to wait for months to receive care. The Army has even tried to refuse benefits, claiming illnesses are due to pre-existing conditions.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. How much of the bill for the war in Iraq is your state paying for? Missouri, for example, is paying $2.7 billion for the war. In comparison, that state has only received $116 million for Homeland Security and only $349 million in federal funding for the No Child Left Behind Act. That's according to a new interactive map created by the Center for American Progress. Available at their website, www.americanprogress.org, the map even breaks down state-by-state spending on the war by major cities.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Like a bird on a wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir.
Some of us are feeling that way. It's, no, the it's fascinating. You know, you see this this map that somebody emailed this to me today. This the link to it, where you take, instead of looking at red states and blue states, you look at red counties and blue counties, or red and blue voters. And suddenly the country looks much more homogeneous. Homogeneous. And, you know, it really, we're all here. I don't think that it's, there's a very small number of people, frankly, I think, on the extreme right, and probably a very small number on the extreme left, who are interested in dividing America. And calling everybody else, you know, bad people and marginalizing them, or trying to achieve single party rule or something like that. But I think the vast majority of us would really just like a country that works. Thank you very much. We'd really like to not be involved in foreign wars. You know, George Washington warned us about foreign entanglements. We'd really like to get back to that. We would really like to know that if we work hard and put in our time, that we're going to be paid fairly, and that we're going to be paid a living wage, that we'll be paid enough that we can put our kids through school, that we can pay for their health care and ours, that we can set aside a little for retirement, that, you know, we can live a decent life, that we can take a vacation. I don't think most people, I think the vast majority of Americans are frankly not interested in getting rich. They're interested in having a decent life. There's a, you know, there's a small, a very small number of people, perhaps who have subclinical obsessive compulsive disorder, who just, you know, who fixate on money, and a million isn't enough, 10 million isn't enough, 50 million isn't enough, 100 million isn't enough, and they've got to have their taxes cut. And you know, I think that they're the aberration, frankly. I think America is broadly speaking, the vast majority, easily 70-80%, probably 90-95% of Americans, are generous, caring, considerate people who really do believe in things like good, high-quality public education, fire and police departments that are appropriately staffed. You know, laws that make sense. Sentencing guidelines that take out people who are habitually violent, but not necessarily, you know, the guy who shoplifted for the third time. I mean, you do something about it, but this is a guy who's got a medical problem. Or maybe he's got a criminal problem, but is it, you know, life in prison for the third shoplifting? There's just the practical problem of it costs about $60,000, $70,000 a year to house these people. Is it really worth it to us for that? I mean, psychiatric treatment might be a whole lot cheaper. I think that there's a lot. Most Americans are just, you know, they look at these things in a practical way. You don't want there to be so many abortions, then let's teach people how to use contraception. Let's enhance the programs that are available for women who are pregnant and can't afford to complete their pregnancies. You know, let's give them some support. Let's support adoption programs. There's a real demand for adoption in the United States. You know, let's encourage these programs. You'll see fewer abortions. I mean, we've seen this before in the United States. We know that this stuff works. We don't have to say, women, sorry, you don't have access to the Fourth Amendment. Right of privacy, no. Looking at the news today in the Wall Street Journal. Oh, no, actually, this was in our local paper. The good news, the economic news, is from the Associated Press, an article by Janine Eversa. Exports rise, trade deficit narrows to $51.6 billion. This is, you know, on its surface, a good move. The U.S. trade deficit shrank to $51.6 billion in September, an improvement brought about as exports posted their best month on record. Now, here's what you have to put in your mind. Whenever somebody talks about the trade deficit, that's the amount of money that has to be made up by somebody buying part of our country. Now, let me say that again. The trade deficit is the amount of money that has to be made up by somebody from outside the United States coming in and buying part of America. Roughly about 6% of all business activity in the United States right now is owned by foreign corporations or foreign citizens. And there are different numbers, depending on how you slice and dice it, depending on how you define it. It may be as much as 15%. For example, the publisher of my books, one of the publishers of my books, my latest book, What Would Jefferson Do?, published by Random House, Harmony or Crown, one of the imprints of Random House. Random House, a few years ago, in fact, actually, it was after they had published one of my first books, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, was bought out by a German company, Bertelsmann, which is the largest publisher in the world now. Well, we had a trade deficit with Germany. The Germans ended up with a whole lot of dollars. And where could they spend them? Here. Right? We had this trade deficit. And so, you know, the Germans came in and they bought Chrysler. And they bought Random House. They bought one of our three largest car manufacturers, and they bought us our largest publisher. And people say, well, what's wrong with that? That's called insourcing. Isn't that a wonderful thing? You've got foreign corporations coming here and creating jobs in America. Well, first of all, by and large, they're not creating jobs. Yeah, there was a little bit of that. You know, Reagan, ironically, put limits on imports to try and save the American auto industry. And so Toyota came over and started building factories in Kentucky and Ohio, as I recall. And so you could say, yeah, they're creating jobs. But actually, those jobs would have been created anyway. I mean, if there's a demand for cars, somebody's going to build the factory. But because we had such a trade deficit, because of Reaganomics, the Japanese built the factory instead of Americans building the factory. And the downside of this, I mean, the apparent upside is, oh, gee, people get employed. Well, as I said, the people would have gotten employed anyway because there was a demand for the cars. The downside is that the profits generated by the labor in America are going to Japan and Germany. And in the case of Random House, well, Germany also. I was going to say England. Another, you know, another one of my books is published by Hodder, which is a publisher in England. But and so, you know, it's a really good idea for us to not only not have a trade deficit, but actually to have a trade surplus, because then we can start like buying back our country from these folks. Because otherwise, you have foreign owners basically coming in and strip mining the United States, taking our wealth out. The trade deficit represents the impoverishment of the United States. The narrowing in the trade gap in September came as exports rose and imports fell, notes the Associated Press story. Clifford Waldman, the economist at Manufacturers Alliance, a research group, says it's a modest positive in what remains a disturbing story. See, we exported $97.5 billion worth of goods and services in September, but our imports were $51.5 billion more than that. We bought more than we sold. So they end up. Now, what's happened is that it's causing this narrowing of the trade gap, which is a good thing, is a bad mechanism. And that is that the dollar is becoming worth less. The dollar is falling substantially. And that makes things made in the United States cheaper if you live in Germany. And it makes things made in Germany more expensive if you live here in the United States. So we import less and we export more, which on its surface seems like a good thing. But when the dollar becomes less valuable relative to other currencies, what that means is that the rest of the world is recognizing that the United States is less wealthy, that our wealth is being stripped away from us. Now, how is our wealth being stripped away from us? In two ways. One, by virtue of this trade deficit, allowing foreigners, causing, you know, virtually forcing foreigners to come in to the United States and buy up American companies because there's nothing else they can do with those dollars. They have IOUs from us. And the other way that it represents our becoming poorer over time is, or the other thing that's causing us to become poorer, is this massive deficit spending that the Bush administration is engaged in. I mean, Bill Clinton was the last president, and Jimmy Carter, the last president before him, to have anything close to a balanced budget or a surplus. And so what we've been doing is we've been giving these huge tax breaks to wealthy people who then very often park their money offshore. You've got very large American corporations creating all these offshore subsidiaries and all these, you know, phony baloney companies in offshore places. And as a consequence of this, our wealth is going out of the country. And we're having to borrow more and more from foreigners. China now owns a big chunk of our debt. And so the world is looking at us and going, you know, George Bush has spent America into near bankruptcy. They're going to, you know, Congress is going to have to meet this coming week and raise the debt ceiling. So we are becoming paupers. We have gone in, before Ronald Reagan came into office, we were the largest creditor in the world. More countries owed us money than ever before in the history of the world. Anybody had ever owed anybody. We were creditors, which means that when they paid us back, they had to pay us back with interest. We were getting wealthier and wealthier at the expense of countries that decided to go on borrowing sprees. And, you know, just looking at it from a purely American point of view, that was a good thing. But now, after 25 years of Reaganomics, of trickle-down economics, of conservative economics, of supply-side economics, we are the largest debtor in the world. We have become we owe the world more than any other nation in the history of the world has. And this is just, I think, it's frankly, a very destructive thing. Here's another story. Weak dollar helps U.S. companies selling abroad. I talked about this a little bit yesterday when the article in the Wall Street Journal about how Bush talks about he wants a strong dollar because it sounds good, but actually their policies have been to weaken the dollar. Why? Well, because we're borrowing all this money. Let's pay it back with cheaper dollars. This is the beginning of inflation. Inflation represents it takes more dollars to buy the same amount of goods. It means the dollar's worth less. Or if you say it fast, the dollar's worthless. Let's hope and pray that day doesn't come that it's truly worthless. But it is dramatically worth less now than it was when George W. came into office. About 25% against the euro, as I recall. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to call in. Holly in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Holly, thanks for patiently waiting while I did my rant there. What's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. That's my first time calling in. I had spoken to someone that told me this, and I haven't looked into it enough. I just wanted to pass this on. About a week before the election, the Treasury option or the Treasury bonds actually failed for the first time in 200 years, didn't sell.
Yeah.
Instead of reporting, I guess they just withdrew the whole sale.
Holly, whatever kind of phone you're using, it's getting really funky. Can you make it?
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay.
So you were saying about a week before the election, the Treasury offering failed?
Yeah, the options bond failed for the first time in 200 years, apparently. It just didn't sell.
Yeah.
And I haven't been able to follow up on
how
that happened. And instead of reporting that, what they did was apparently they just withdrew the sale, so there was no being...
Yeah, you know, I've heard rumors of that in a couple of quarters. I frankly tend to discount them because I think that had that happened, the very conservative newsletters, the gold bug newsletters, the conspiracy theorists of the right, let's say, only they're really into economic stuff and they're frankly more often right than wrong, would have gotten hysterical. I mean, you couldn't have kept it out of the media, and the Wall Street Journal, I'm sure, would have reported. I doubt that happened. I did read stories that there was concern about that, and this is the big concern. In fact, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal on the front page of the Wall Street Journal yesterday about the concern that we are now borrowing so much money that we will be in trouble if the rest of the world says, "Hey, you know, the dollar's starting to fall. We're not sure we're going to buy your IOUs anymore."
Yeah, I think I would have imagined everything would have crashed if that had really happened. But
yes.
I just hadn't heard a peep about it anywhere else.
Yeah, that's why I discounted it. And there is a lot of concern, however, and it is a very legitimate concern that it may happen. And if it does happen, you'll see the Dow cut in half. You'll see us plunged into a Great Depression that will make 1929 look like an absolute picnic. And the conditions are perfect for it. I mean, George W. Bush has set up the perfect conditions for it by driving us so deeply into debt and by getting us stuck in a foreign war that is costing us $1 billion a week. It's just he's created this train wreck. It's one of the reasons that, you know, on this program, I would say from time to time, you know, if John Kerry wins, I almost feel sorry for him, you know, because he's going to be inheriting this incredible mess. And now Bush is going to have to inherit his own mess. We'll see what happens. I mean, Reagan. Thank you, Holly. It's a good point. And, you know, I mean, Reagan in his first term did, and thank you for the call, Holly. It's good to hear from you. Reagan in his first term had these huge tax cuts. And, you know, he 6 years in a row, he raised taxes. A little bit of fiscal responsibility. Not this guy. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A recent report released by the Sierra Club, the United Steelworkers, SEIU, Unite Here, and others reveals clean energy policies would create at least a million new jobs in the United States.
Clean energy policies will create 1.4 million new jobs nationwide once the policies are implemented. These are policies for clean cars and clean energy.
Dan Becker, director of the Global Warming Program at the Sierra Club.
What the study did was it looked at what happens when we save energy. When you have a car that uses less gas, you're saving money on the gasoline. When you have refrigerators and light bulbs and other appliances that use less electricity, you're saving money on electricity. Rather than exporting that money to the Persian Gulf for oil or out of state to an electric utility, you get to spend that money on something else.
The report found that American households would save more than $1,000 annually by 2025. And Becker says increased consumer buying power helps all workers by creating jobs.
I think it became very clear that manufacturing jobs were being eroded not by environmental regulation in the United States, but by faulty trade agreements.
David Foster, District 11 Director for the United Steelworkers, sees a shift in the way union members view the environment.
We lost 3,500 steelworker jobs in the state of Minnesota. Every single one of them was lost because of trade agreements. Not a one of them was lost because of American environmental regulation.
In addition to increased jobs, Becker says clean energy policies would reduce global warming and protect the quality of our air, drinking water, and food.
No one knows better than workers that we need a clean environment. And the good news from this study is that we can have a clean environment and more jobs, that the two go hand in hand, and that's good for all of us.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
For united we stand, divided we fall.
Yeah, if ever there was a time we need to pull together, it's now. It's now. It's a time to pull together, to share, to hold up our ideals, to educate each other, to help awaken America. And, you know, Americans, one at a time, through the dangers of these radical conservative policies that are cutting, that are disemboweling, eviscerating our economy, devastating our middle class, and creating a small number of very, very rich, very conservative corporate moguls, politicians like Bill Frist, you know, the Limbaughs of the world and whatnot, a small number of very, very wealthy folks. And it's just, you know, it's time for us to wake folks up. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, Cecilia in Seminole County, Florida. Hey, Cecilia, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Happy anniversary.
Well, thank you. That's
my 19th was yesterday.
Oh, but good on you.
Yeah, saw you on C-SPAN. I don't want to embarrass you, but you have beautiful eyes, and eyes are the windows to the soul. So you are obviously a person with a very old and gracious soul.
Well, thank you, Cecilia.
Did you see an email that I sent to you yesterday about what the EPA, you know, the anything but Environmental Protection Agency now, and their testing of poor infants? And pesticides?
I did that. I haven't. I've got about 1,000 emails in my inbox from the last 4 days that I haven't read yet, so I haven't gotten to it.
Well,
but I did that story a couple of days ago on the program here.
Oh, okay. All right. And then there's another. I mean, I just think it's appalling that you know, it's suspended because it's a public relations nightmare, not any concern about the effects of pesticides.
And the worst part of it was that it was paid for by a consortium of pesticide manufacturers and chemical manufacturers.
I mean, Chemistry Council.
Yeah, right.
Then there's something from Bush Green Watch today. God help us. So next week when Congress goes back into session, there's a project called the Biscuit Project, and it's going to ratchet up logging.
That is going to be our Jaws alert for tomorrow. I've got the I got the music all ready for it. So
all right,
we will be talking
you.
About that on the radio tomorrow. Cecilia, thanks for the call. We got to wrap it up here. It's the end of the day. You too. Bye now. Thanks for your kind words. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today and for sticking around with me all these years. Thanks to Ira for showing up and engineering our program, to Brad for our music, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet on radiopower.org, to Ben Birch for our archives at White Rose Society, and Mike Toth for our archives at tomhartman.com. The folks in our chat room for sharing the day with me. I learned a lot. Thank you. The folks and to you for listening. Thank you very much. Do appreciate it. We will see you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.